32 troopers that with proper care and just a little discipline should serve you well during your entire tour of duty on this planet. They're called your teeth. But when your platoon gets out of line, holes in the formation, or other problems, you need to call in an expert, like General, Dr. William Farrell, with decades of experience keeping those troops in line and executing their assigned duties properly and dependably. If you'd rather not be there while he reestablishes order amongst the troops, Dr. Farrell offers sedation dentistry. He and his highly trained staff will whip your troops into shape without any discomfort. And having served himself in both the Navy and the Marine Corps, Dr. Farrell offers special consideration to veterans. Let him take the best care of your platoon of teeth, and they will serve you always. Call 547-5757 or visit palosidrodentistry.com. At ease.
And for a limited time, Dr. Farrell is offering x-ray, exam, and cleaning for just $175. Call 547-5757 to schedule your visit.
I expected to be a lot easier.
I didn't know what step to take next.
I was transitioning from the military. I was a vehicle gunner.
An avionics specialist.
I missed my unit, my family.
Playing with my daughter, I'd felt like a stranger.
I didn't have a clear sense of what to do next.
And then I thought, if I'm going through this, other veterans have gone through it too, right?
So I reached out, and I saw that I wasn't alone.
Go to maketheconnection.net to learn how other veterans have overcome the challenges of transitioning out of the military.
KCNR is proud to announce that we are now live at 96.5 FM, as well as online, and as always, heard on 1460 AM. Weekday mornings, wake up with the Sue McClain News Hour, followed by Free Fire Radio, your talk radio station at the epicenter of change in downtown Reading. 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, the conscience of the nation. Noon to 3, find your financial peace with Dave Ramsey. 3 to 6, the hard-hitting constitutional expert, Mark Levin. Monday through Thursdays at 6 p.m., local shows feature everything from the paranormal to pop culture to unsung heroes of our area. 7 to 9, Ben Shapiro with an expanded program that brings the issues of the day to your radio. And finish your weekday with the Chris Plant Show, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. KCNR, now on 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, and always online. More than ever, we're your locally owned, community-connected talk radio.
You may have seen the sign. You may have even driven by it today. Hi, I'm Rick Gendra, owner of Gendra 76 on the corner of Cypress and Bocelli. We've been a family-owned automotive care and repair business since 1979. And yes, we still pump your gas and clean your glass. Stop by anytime. Let us show you what old-fashioned service is all about. And try our app to save up to 25 cents per gallon of quality 76 gas.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
For many people, their faith, their family, and their health are the most important things in their lives. Every day, the work that I do influences these things. Children go to college, couples move into their first home, people retire, businesses start, and charities are supported. All of this in part because of the work I do. I can make complicated things clearer so people understand them. I can solve problems and find solutions. People need someone to put their interests first. And for many people, I am that someone. I can lend an ear, stand with you during life's ups and downs, and provide that advice at just the right time. That's why I love my job. That's why I'm a financial advisor, Susan Eastman, with Wells Fargo Advisors in Redding, California, 243-7561. Once again, this is Susan Eastman with Wells Fargo Advisors. I'd love to be your financial advisor. Please give me a call at 243-7561.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide three delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
Easily because they're being produced in the private sector. Oil and gas companies here are reformatting their factories to produce more ventilators. We're producing way more PPE. We're ramping up that production rapidly. And we're looking at ways to build field hospitals. So there's a lot of preparation on the public health side that is occurring. And we should need to tell people, I think, a little bit more clearly that that's the point of the isolation. That's the point of the social distancing. And then that ends, and then we actually come out and fight. We unite, we fight, we get our supply lines in place, and we actually move forward, because we have to balance that out. We have to. I think it's totally unrealistic to think that we continue these lockdowns for months on end. That's not sustainable.
Yeah, so what does it look like when we come out of this? There's been a lot of talking about, you know, people wearing masks, social distancing, mass events still, you know, not taking place, like the RNC is supposed to take place in August. Obviously, so is the DNC now. And, you know, the election in November, there's been talk about a second wave that happens in the fall. It basically seems to me that the medical developments will be what the medical developments will be, that the testing will be what it will be, that the ICUs and the ventilators will be what they will be. And that it's going to be very difficult to say to people that we want you to lock down again for months at a time come September, that there's going to have to be some sort of transition to a new normal up to the point when we have a vaccine and we can go back to some sort of real normal. Also, I've yet to hear sort of the factorial decision making from the Trump administration as to when we go back to work. So President Trump is very encouraging that he, you know, wants to go back to work, that he doesn't want to see a permanent change between the government and the American citizenry. That's something I'm not seeing from Democrats, who seem to want to use this crisis as an opportunity to radically reshift the balance of power between citizens and the U.S. government. But at the same time, it'd be really nice to know what the inputs are so that we could have some level of predictability. Like, okay, when it gets below this number, we can talk about people who are below the age of 40 going back to work. When it gets below this number, we can talk about, you know, how we reopen certain businesses or events of a particular size. We haven't seen any of those sorts of models put out there.
Yeah, and we have to decide. I've seen some suggestions. I think I saw Scott Gottlieb say, listen, after 14 days, if we're seeing a continued decrease in the new numbers of cases or deaths, that's a good indication that we should be reopening that segment of society. Another way to look at it is the R factor below one or above one, as far as the contagion factor, meaning if you're a person who's infected, how many people are you infecting? If it's less than one, well, then you're on track to reopen the economy. Like you said, let's just decide what it's going to be. And we need to give people that predictability. I am still in favor of even without those specific factors, we need to set a timeline and we need to decide that we are just going to fight this. And there are going to be new normals, but we can live in that new normal, whether it's we all wear masks now, we all wear, you know, and we all don't touch each other now, but we can also still get back to work. You know, on a micro level, Americans are pretty good at problem solving. Okay, so we had an office and it was set up this way. Well, we can still work there, but we have to set it up this way now. We should also be investing heavily in the testing regime. That's one thing I didn't mention. Heavily in the testing regime, but also testing for antibodies. So you can imagine a near future where if we can ramp up the production of millions and millions of these tests to test for antibodies, see who is actually immune, and get them right back into the workforce. Maybe you get that certificate of health with whatever it is. But these are the kind of This is the kind of mobilization that we need to be thinking about and setting a timeline to, because we have to give the economy and our society some predictability.
More on that in just a moment. But first, a word from our sponsor. Gang, I got to tell you, Daily Wire membership, it's the only way you should be viewing our content. You are missing all the best features if you are not a member. Right now, using promo code Shapiro, you get 10% off any member plan you choose. What makes membership so great? Well, members get our articles ad-free, access to all of our live broadcasts and show library, the full 3 hours of The Ben Shapiro Show, select bonus content, access to the mailbag, and more. Plus, our new all-access tier gets you into exclusive live online Q&A discussions with me, Andrew Klavan, Matt Walsh, and Michael Moles, plus Daily Wire writers and special guests. And don't forget, you'll also get the greatest of all beverage vessels, the Leftist Tier's Tumblr. Yes, you get all of those wonders, plus 10% off when you use promo code Shapiro. Stop depriving yourself. Come join the fun. A membership is going to make you just the happiest person on earth. If it doesn't, well, you know, that's life. Stop depriving yourself. Come on over. Join us at Daily Wire and become a member right now with promo code Shapiro. Get 10% off. So, Dan, I also wanted to ask you about some of the media coverage of situations surrounding the coronavirus, not only the coverage of President Trump, but the coverage of the budget negotiations over the single largest spending package in the history of mankind, and then the continued push by Democrats for even more than that. The media coverage of – I want to get your take specifically on the firing of this Navy captain who was sending out emails to people who are not in the military chain of command about his opinions with regard to this aircraft carrier. The media have been treating it as though he was a whistleblower when he wasn't actually operating inside the chain of command. It seems to me that while the media has been doing some good work in covering this, they've also been doing a lot of horrible work in deliberately misconstruing information and or just making obvious and stupid mistakes.
Yeah, you listed a bunch of things there, and there's so many examples of awful, awful media coverage from the way Nancy Pelosi blew up the entire negotiation, and the New York Times changed their headlines continuously to cover for her. You know, I have made it my promise. I will never let the American people forget what Democrats did that week. It was deplorable. It was disgusting. What ended up being in that bill was barely different from what we had negotiated the last weekend. And now we know, in hindsight, millions of jobs were being lost while she was playing those games, while Democrats went along with playing those games. I just can't believe it. I can't believe that they can never be allowed to get away with that. On the aircraft carrier situation, yeah, I mean, your analysis is basically right. As far as I understand it, you know, first of all, help was already on the way and being discussed. This could have simply been a conversation between the captain and the admiral, but instead he decided to throw that email out to everybody. And your question is, well, why is the media doing that? Well, and I think you'd agree with this. Our culture these days tends to reward anybody, and this is the left and the right, by the way, tends to reward anybody who goes against the man, right, who whistleblows and who like, you know what I mean, who goes outside the norm just to fight against some kind of authority. Like there's some kind of some romantical ideal behind that. I think that's what drives this kind of reaction, even though in reality the truth is, you know, he really didn't go about this the right way, and it was totally unnecessary the way he did it. You could argue there's some detriment to national security because now it's out in the open. The Chinese know that we have an aircraft carrier that is potentially, you know, going through problems. So yeah, your analysis is basically correct on that.
So moving forward here, Dan, what do you think is going to be the timeline for everybody getting back to work? I know we're all sort of speculating at this point. Again, I keep noting that these models that have been trotted out were too high by fairly large numbers. We hope that continues. It's hard to tell whether, again, that is them underestimating the effect of lockdowns or whether that is them tremendously or at least significantly overestimating the death rates from the virus because so much of the testing is not available. When do you think that we can actually get back to the new normal as opposed to the actual normal?
It's hard for me to answer that. I'm not in these operations centers looking at all the data. And plus, it really should be different from state to state, from city to city. We should be opening up our society much quicker. If you're in New York City, where people are living on top of each other, even still, you know, there's a different conversation to be had there. They're dealing with different factors that I don't think these models account for as well as they possibly could. These models are guides. They're guides to tell us, you know, possible scenarios. But we also have to just take a step back and plan as if we have more than just the models at hand, right? We know how the virus works, more or less, right? We know that it mostly spreads by touch. We know how to socially distance but still live our lives in an effective way. We know that masks, you know, how they work, what they do, what they don't do. We're learning a lot more. And again, I really think that we have to set the timeline. If it's the 30 days, if it's at least the federal guidelines, if those are the 30 days, end of April, then let's stick to that at the federal side. And if certain states and municipalities are still having problems, they can react accordingly. You know, you can target, we could target a little bit better. What some people would say, moving from a horizontal approach to a vertical approach. Right now we've horizontally just covered everybody with social distancing. Well, eventually we really need to move to this vertical approach where we're Maybe we target certain travel restrictions, all right? Maybe we target certain more vulnerable populations, keep them quarantined, let others get back to work. We have to look at testing regimes for certain industries, you know, looking at groups of people that interact with each other a lot. Okay, let's get them tested and then get them back to work. Like, we need to set out this timeline. I keep saying the word timeline, and I'm not in charge, so I'm not going to say what the time is, but I am on the side of sooner than later. I'll say that.
Well, Dan Crenshaw, really appreciate your time. Representative Dan Crenshaw from Texas. Check out his brand new book, Fortitude. It really is worth the read. Dan, appreciate it, and stay safe in there or out there, as the case may be.
Thanks a lot, Ben. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Congressman. All righty, coming up, we're going to be joined by Olivia Enos. She's a senior policy analyst at the Asian Studies Center at the Heritage Foundation, talking about human rights. We'll be talking about China with her, what the United States can do to push back against China. We'll get to that in just a moment. This is the Ben Shapiro Show.
Are you drowning in IRS tax debt?
I owe the IRS $37,000.
Get ready for a toll-free hotline. Take advantage of new IRS tax forgiveness programs that may protect you from IRS collection agencies. They have the power to garnish your wages, put liens on your property, and levy your bank account. Civic Tax Relief can help protect you from the IRS.
Civic Tax Relief basically represented me against the IRS, and by the time everything was completed, I didn't owe the IRS anything.
Find out about the Fresh Start program that is now available through Civic Tax Relief. Civic Tax Relief's special tax hotline can help you discover all the relief programs available for free.
I would recommend anyone who has a tax problem to contact Civic Tax Relief.
Just call 800-841-0908. 800-841-0908. Don't wait. Call now. 800-841-0908. 800-841-0908.
The COVID-19 pandemic threatens millions. Courageous health workers are risking their lives to protect us all, but many don't have the supplies and support they need. Over the past 60 years, Project Hope has trained and equipped health workers in over 100 countries. Now, as the pandemic spreads, Project Hope is expanding its work in the United States and around the world. To learn more about Project Hope's coronavirus response, visit projecthope.org, sponsored by Project Hope.
If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes, you need a new start. Our New Start program will stop collection efforts, remove any liens the IRS has in place, and help you reduce your back taxes by as much as 80%. That's right, 80%. Call 1-800-312-9970. Let the professionals at Coast One Financial Group fight to get you the new start you deserve. If you owe at least $10,000 to the IRS and need a new start on your back taxes, call 1-800-312-9970.
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-501-3689 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-501-3689 for your free author submission kit. Again, 800-501-3689.
Message and data rates may apply.
What if there were a top-ranked business degree that gave you access to world-renowned faculty, leaders, and mentors, but on your schedule? The W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University is now accepting high-quality applicants for its MBA and Business Analytics Master's degree programs offered 100% online. Learn more about the top-ranked W.P. Carey business degrees online. Text RANK to 79645. Again, that's R-A-N-K to 79645.
Welcome Welcome back. This is the Ben Shapiro Show. Joining us on the line is Olivia Eno, Senior Policy Analyst in the Asian Studies Center at the Heritage Foundation. Olivia, thanks so much for joining the show. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
So, Olivia, how exactly should the United States seek to get some sort of recompense from China for their role in coronavirus? There's one study that suggests that if China had actually been forthcoming about all the information on coronavirus early, then 95% of all casualties that the world has undergone would have been avoided. What exactly should the United States be doing to you know, basically push back against China here?
Well, you know, Ben, the U.S. has long been a bastion of freedom and liberty, and we have promoted that not only inside our own borders, but also beyond. And so as we look to China's early response, literally from the very beginning days of the COVID-19 outbreak, we saw them restricting freedom of speech. We saw them limiting civil society's ability to respond to the crisis. And I think we saw this most clearly through the case of Dr. Li Wenliang, who was the whistleblower who said, look, I'm starting to see the emergence of a pneumonia-like virus that is incredibly infectious. And what did they do? They shut him down. And this is the type of activities that we see the Chinese Communist Party engaging in. And we see them not only limiting individuals' freedom of speech, but also limiting the ability of non-government affiliated civil society organizations, as well as international NGOs' ability to respond and help the Chinese people. This is yet another clear example of the Chinese Communist Party tamping down on the individual liberties of people in China and placing the renown of the Chinese Communist Party ahead of the well-being and health of the Chinese people. So I think we need to hold them accountable. We need to call on China to do a better job of respecting the freedoms of its individual citizens. We need to consider potential sanctions for individuals who are restricting, for example, freedom of religion or freedom of speech. In tangible ways. And frankly, as the top single country donor giving $1.3 billion in assistance to China, we need to demand that China grant access to the CDC.
So how exactly can we make all of these things happen forthwith? I mean, right now we're trying to cooperate with China because we're in the middle of a global pandemic. But you mentioned things like sanctions. Should we basically be suspending free trade with China until such time as they undertake some of these measures that you're talking about? And will they ever be willing to undertake these sorts of measures, given the fact that it is a communist dictatorship?
Well, I think that, you know, the challenge or the response to threats to freedom is not to further restrict access, especially not for the Chinese people. So I wouldn't move toward restricting free trade with China at this point, but I would consider individualized sanctions. There's already authorities that the U.S. Treasury possesses through something called the Global Magnitsky, which enables individuals and entities to be targeted when they engage in human rights violations or corruption. And so I think that there may be a case to be made for specific individuals who we know have been undermining religious freedom, for example. I mean, there's an amazing story of an individual who is named Mr. Sun, who actually was approached by Chinese police for calling on congregants in his church to pray and fast. They told him he was engaging in unauthorized prayers. Unauthorized prayers. I mean, this is just unbelievable that the Chinese government is invading in the individual, personal, and spiritual lives of ordinary Chinese citizens. And so I think, you know, for reasons even beyond COVID-19, it would be a good idea to target individuals who are undermining religious freedom through those sanctions authorities. But I really think that the U.S. does need to press for greater access for CDC. And I think that this should come just by the very nature that the U.S. is the top single country donor. And I think we need to be putting greater diplomatic pressure on China in other venues in order to ensure that we're able to have that access and to best serve the Chinese people.
Olivia Enos, Senior Policy Analyst in the Asian Studies Center at the Heritage Foundation. Really appreciate your time and your insight. Have a good day, and I appreciate it again.
Thank you.
All righty. Well, we will be back here tomorrow with all of your latest updates on coronavirus. Maybe some good news. This is the Ben Shapiro Show.
a jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
We all had friends and family that were affected by the car fire. Most of the cleanup is done now, and a lot of families are looking at rebuilding. If you relied on a well for your water system, it's important to assess the condition of your well and its capabilities to be able to meet the demands of new construction codes. I'm Ted Ogilvie with Diamond Core Drilling. We've been providing water well systems and pumps in Northern California since 1980. Let us help you with your rebuilding process. That's Diamond Core Drilling, 275-8162.
Did you know that the City of Reading has started licensing commercial cannabis activities within the city limits? Synergy is the first of the city's approved retailers to obtain licensure, bringing to the Reading area the most experienced retailer in the North State. They will ensure that your visit is both professional and comfortable. Access is simple and discreet. Synergy has a private 25-space parking lot at the back of the building. Synergy is located at 345 Hempstead Drive, Reading.
Hi, this is Senior Chief Rob Burrows with the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center, and I am your host every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 with Battlefield Expressions. Battlefield Expressions is where we talk about veterans issues, advocacy for our community, and those in our community who help support our veterans. Once again, join me every Saturday morning from 9 to 11, Battlefield Expressions on KCNR 96.5 and 1460 AM.
From the Pacific Justice Institute, this is The Legal Edge, defending your rights as a Christian, a parent, and a citizen. Here's Brad Dickus.
California lawmakers created a new statute in 2018 preventing public employers from disparaging unions. The statute was designed to undercut the 2018 Supreme Court Janus decision, which gave public employees an opt-out right from paying any union dues. Now, seven elected officials in California are suing the California Public Employment Relations Board for violating their First Amendment rights of free speech. Well, Pacific Justice Institute will provide free legal help to any employees who, as a matter of conscience, seek to opt out from paying union dues.
The Pacific Justice Institute provides legal representation to individuals without charge. Learn more at pacificjustice.org. That's pacificjustice.org.
No one plans to visit the emergency room, but when life's accidents happen, you need on-time, first-rate medical attention. Shasta Regional Medical Center, located at 1100 Butte Street in downtown Reading, has the fastest possible transit and admission of emergency patients. We at Shasta Medical Center are dedicated to all patients who need care, regardless of their ability to pay. Shasta Regional Medical Center, delivering patient-centered health care with compassion, dignity, and respect for every patient and their family.
Hi, I'm Sharon Clark of Home Helpers. It's amazing to look back at all the families we've touched since 2004, but our clients say it best.
I want to express my deep appreciation for the love and support you and your...
So fortunate to have an organization like Home Helpers.
You never know how much your contribution meant or how greatly you touched our lives.
Thank you so much for helping me care for my husband.
After hearing what it's meant to them, I truly can't imagine doing anything else. When you need help for your loved one, choose Home Helpers. There is no place like home.
You know, it can be difficult to find a trustworthy, knowledgeable, and yet affordable auto repair shop. Advanced Automotive is the second generation, locally owned, full-service repair shop serving our community since 1993, and one of only four AAA-approved auto repair shops in the Reading area. Advanced Automotive has a goal, and it's to keep it simple to have safe, reliable vehicles for our customers and our community. Call or come by to meet the crew who is here to serve you. 244-4423. Advanced Automotive.
For over 45 years, Clyde's Home Entertainment is the place people turn to for locally owned expert advice on electronics that turn your home into a theater. Clyde's goes the extra mile for their customers. They have a huge selection of audio and video accessories and equipment. Whether it's the latest 4K television or a hard-to-find accessory, Clyde's is the place for all your home electronic needs. Clyde's is a full-service dealer for Samsung, Klipsch, Yamaha, LG, and more. They offer full-service Dish Network. Be sure to ask about the current monthly specials. The original, and still the best, Clyde's Enterprises, 1250 Hartnell and Reading. They have it all. 221-4144. That's 221-4144. Clyde's.
Of physicians, as well as the American College of Chest Physicians and a fellow of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. Dr. Ahmed, thanks for joining the show. Really appreciate it.
Ben, thanks for having me. And I'm now affiliated with NYU Langone, but I'll just speak about what we're seeing in New York generally.
That'd be great. So what is happening in New York? It's hard to tell, honestly, from the media reports how bad things actually are. You're seeing some media reports suggesting that the hospitals are completely overwhelmed, that there's a shortage of ventilators and medical equipment. And then you're seeing local officials say that there is, while the system is strained, that it has not broken and that there is, in fact, medical equipment and ventilators. What are you seeing?
So today I'm speaking to you from my hospital, which is an NYU Langone affiliate in Nassau County, where we're now having the peak number of cases. We have enough personal protective equipment. I'm actually carrying some, and I've been using it all morning before I came to speak to you. We have almost double, if not more, the number of intensive care units. When I left work here on Thursday night, we had 7 intensive care units. Now we have approximately 9. We normally take care of only 3. That tells us that there's a huge increase in the critically ill, and those patients are almost to the last patient on mechanical ventilation. So that means that these patients are on life support, needing intense monitoring all of the time on devices to breathe. We have used all of our mechanical ventilators, which are formerly for that purpose. We have used what's called non-invasive ventilators. We have used all of those, which are converted for the purpose. We have now additional ventilators. We obtained 30 sometime before the weekend, and some of them, I'm informed, have been donated by the United States military, and they do all the work that I need for my ventilator. So there is no patient here that is not getting critical care to the level that they need. But this is almost 300% the usual capacity that we see.
So given the rise in capacity that you're seeing, the number of people who are coming in and the forecast, which is that it's going to be bad throughout this week, there's been a lot of focus on hydroxychloroquine. The president, of course, has been talking about it. Governor Cuomo suggested that there's been anecdotal evidence that it's working. What do you make of all the focus on hydroxychloroquine, and where do you stand in terms of all of the talk about whether it should be used, despite the fact that there are no mass studies of it?
Right. Great question. I'm using it on all my critically ill patients. Every patient here that becomes critically ill gets it day 1 through day 5. And the data, I know the data, it's from the south of France. All it has shown is a very definitive reduction in viral load. We know that the less virus you have, the less immune response you're going to have. So the projection is that that is going to make the injury to the lung less. We don't have the facts because we're not waiting 3 years to do tests and find out what happens. We're just using it. Do I know if it's making my patients better? I have no idea, because the patients are severely ill, and we're giving them many other strategies as well. But some of them are responding, so it's not a treatment I want to withhold. And I kind of agree with the president that this is a drug, the Plaquenil, that's been around many years for other diseases. We know its side effect profile. We know its interaction profile. So the risk versus benefit weighs out in terms of using it for this disease, because there isn't anything else. We're also using an antibiotic called azithromycin, or some places they exchange it with doxycycline. That cuts down the inflammation. We know that from many other lung diseases. They're also getting high levels of oxygen. They're also getting steroids at different points in their course. They're also getting immune drugs. So all of my patients, I'm in an intensive care unit today with 13 patients, that's just one floor above from where I am now. They are all on a combination of these agents, and they are, at the moment, surviving their illness. But the public needs to understand this is an extremely severe illness. I've been in medicine almost 30 years. This is the most severe lung injury I have seen in my career in the quantity of people. Right now, my youngest patient is 40 years old. Last week, we had a patient 36 years old. There have been patients in their 20s. So nobody is immune from this. And we're praying that the social distancing will start having an impact. We are in the beginning of the peak now in Nassau County in New York.
So, Dr. Ahmed, in a second, I want to ask you about the kind of patients who are coming in. Are they older? Are they younger? But first, it's 2020. We've only just begun what is bound to be the most insane year for news ever. Now more than ever, it's the time you need to be a Daily Wire member, and right now you can receive 10% off any plan when you use promo code Shapiro. I mean, like, we got an election, we got coronavirus. You need to be updated on everything going on. What makes membership better than not membership, though? Well, members get our articles ad-free, access to all of our live broadcasts and show library, the full 3 hours of The Ben Shapiro Show, select bonus content, access to the mailbag, and more. Plus, our new all-access tier gets you into exclusive live online Q&A discussions with me, Andrew Klavan, Matt Walsh, and Michael Moles, plus Daily Wire writers and special guests. Don't forget, you'll also get the greatest of all beverage vessels, the Leftist Tears Tumbler. Again, that is 10% off all those goodies when you use promo code Shapiro. So head on over to dailywire.com. Come join the fun. Hang out with us over at dailywire.com. When it comes to the breakdown patients, you mentioned the ages of the patients, and we are hearing some cases of people who are in their 30s, in their 40s. The New York City Health Department has released data about the nature of the patients who are coming in. They're still disproportionately elderly. What are you seeing in terms of pre-existing conditions, and what are the pre-existing conditions that people should be most worried about?
So we're seeing a lot of people who have diabetes, a lot of people who don't seem to have a condition but have obesity, seem to have more of a difficult time. We're seeing patients who've got underlying health conditions, maybe they have a kidney disease. Maybe they're on immunotherapy because they are on, they have some kind of chronic malignancy, let's imagine a leukemia or a lymphoma of that nature. So there are people who have very serious health conditions where we are seeing this illness that makes sense that this they could be more vulnerable. But we are also seeing patients who've not had any significant illness and are coming in with the most extraordinarily degree of severe illness. So it may be we've not diagnosed them. They could have prediabetes we didn't know. They could have a health condition we didn't know. But this is not a benign entity. And we have had some 24-year-old patients come in extremis and not survive. So those are not my patients, that is say. So we take this very seriously. We also want to say we do have the most advanced critical care. NYU Langone, like all of the New York hospitals, is highly advanced in critical care. The United States does train doctors in critical care to a very advanced degree. Our patients are getting everything they need. There is no shortage. If we had one patient with COVID or we have 100, they are getting the same level of care that we would do because we've just made it work. The fact that I'm even speaking to you today is I've come out of a 10-year retirement from critical care to help because there are not enough current critical care specialists to do this. But we do have people that are trained and experienced. It's just the capacity and the number of patients that's very, very high and very unusual.
Dr. Ahmed, one of the questions that's been asked is whether the number of cases and deaths are being actually understated because it's possible that a lot of people are not coming into the hospital. And when it comes to the hospitalization statistics, by the time people get to the hospital, do they tend to be more severe or are people coming in with light symptoms at this point?
So you're asking a really smart question. I think the fact is we really don't know what's called the case fatality rate. That means if you take 1 million people that are infected, how many of them will pass away from it? We don't know that because we don't have the population study. So the mortality rates that we have are much higher than if we had all of the data in the background. By the time somebody is coming to a hospital, they've selected out a more severe illness. But remember, I am seeing maybe one-third of the patients in the hospital who are critically ill. There are two-thirds that I will never see because they'll go to a ward or an observation and they'll go home because they get better. And then there's a huge quantity that don't seek medical attention that are also getting better. So we are seeing the very sharp edge of the tip of the iceberg, but that is also startling because the injuries are severe to the lungs and the numbers of these patients are very high. And this is not happening to people who have previous lung disease, and that's the only reason, or previous asthma. We do have those patients. They are vulnerable, but that's not the only reason. It's people with normal lungs that are becoming gravely ill.
So, Dr. Ahmed, you know, there's been a lot of pressure to move toward reopening of the economy. There's some models showing that the flattening of the curve has begun. There's been talk about what exactly happens beyond the flattening of the curve. Presumably the purpose of flattening the curve was to not overwhelm the healthcare system. Let's say that, God willing, we don't actually overwhelm the healthcare system.
God willing.
We've also been told that this virus could be seasonal, and that it could come back in the fall. There could be a second wave. Well, if you were a public policymaker right now, aside from just telling people you need to stay home, shelter in place, social distance, longer term after this curve goes down, what would you be recommending?
So actually, I think it's not necessarily longer term. It's what we should do immediately. And I have to say the president's public health instincts on this pandemic have been exceptionally good. The travel ban on China cut down international case transmission by 80%. And the United States was the first to do it and very criticized, and that has bought us time. He was also very prescient on cutting out travel from Europe. The only regret I have is he should have done it a month sooner, but he did it. And now, similarly, the case for quarantine. I actually believe in something called tailored quarantine that the president has sort of mentioned and has been shot down in flames for. I would like to see more restriction on certain areas where there's intense outbreaks and less restriction on others. Now, that is a very difficult public health and economic decision, but I think that that could be possible. It makes sense to open up areas of the economy where there is less population density, less evidence of outbreak, less penetrance of the virus, a lot of things that we know. We know New York, there's a 34% penetrance of the virus, according to Dr. Birx, which is that one in three people that comes for testing is infected. Some states is as low as 8%. So you can use that data to decide where to open up the economy and also what. Open up the economy where people can work remotely. That should be a priority number one. And people have to still engage in wearing face masks. Even speaking can transmit this virus. 50% of the time it's transmitted with asymptomatic. Hand hygiene has got to become imperative. Maybe we need restaurants with half of tables. Maybe we need theaters with every other row not occupied. I mean, we just don't know how we're going to have to modify, but we cannot stay immobilized forever, though this period that we're doing in New York is going to have huge dividends in the coming 1 to 2 weeks. We're going to see a relief from this kind of intense pressure, which, by the way, we're handling. NYU Langone has handled it incredibly well. We've not had to split a ventilator. We've not had to deny anybody care. And everybody that gets on life support gets it to the last day of their life that is decided by their disease process, not by lack of resources.
Well, Dr. Kanta Ahmed, pulmonologist, intensive care specialist, currently treating COVID-19 patients at NYU Langone in New York. Really appreciate your time and really appreciate you doing what you're doing, taking care of patients out there. The insight is terrific. Thank you so much.
And Ben, thanks for reminding the public that they have a real role to determine our outcome in this. That's so important. What you're doing is saving lives that we really want to be saved.
Well, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. And you're doing a lot more than most other people are doing at this point. So appreciate
the time.
And
Ben, let me just say, Chag Sameach Pesach. I know that's coming.
Oh, you too. You too. Yeah. Coming up, we are going to be getting to Alyssa Milano, who is proving to herself that she is a massive hypocrite when it comes to sexual assault allegations. We'll get to all of that in just 1 second. First, if you thought the lead up to 2016 was nuts, you ain't seen nothing yet. The best place to keep you up to date on all of the insanity is dailywire.com. If you're not a member, you're missing out on a ton of amazing content and new features. Right now, you get 10% off any member plan you choose when you use promo code Shapiro. There's never been a better time to have the capacity to binge watch over at dailywire.com. Members get our articles ad-free, access to all of our live broadcasts and show library, the full 3 hours of The Ben Shapiro Show, select bonus content, access to the mailbag, and more. Plus, our new all-access tier gets you into exclusive live online Q&A discussions with me, Andrew Klavan, Matt Walsh, and Michael Moles, plus Daily Wire writers and special guests. Don't forget, you'll also get the greatest of all beverage vessels, that leftist tears tumbler. Again, that is 10% off any plan when you use promo code Shapiro. So head on over to dailywire.com today. Come join the party because, frankly, what else are you going to do for the next couple of weeks while you self-quarantine? Head on over to dailywire.com today. Alrighty, coming up, Alyssa Milano has now decided that, you know what? Due process is a useful thing. Who would have thunk it? This is the Ben Shapiro Show.
Are your tax problems keeping you up at night? Hi, Tax Owl here from the Coast One Tax Group.
With the new year, it's a great time to lose 10 pounds, paint the house, and finally clean out the garage.
Honey, why don't you start by getting the car serviced at Premier Oil Change? They're super fast and convenient. You get to wait in the car with free Wi-Fi and a free beverage. Plus, they have a rewards program where we can earn points that we can put towards free oil changes and services. You don't even have to make an appointment.
Wow, honey, that sounds a lot better than cleaning out the garage.
At Premier Oil Change, we strive for convenience. Our comprehensive 30-point certified service will ensure you with the peace of mind that your vehicle's in top operating condition. Add to that, free fluid top-ups. Now that is service. And we're quick. Easy in, easy out. Learn more at PremierOilChange.com. Visit us on Facebook or Instagram. Premier Oil is located in the Holiday Shopping Center in Palo Cedro or in Redding on Lake Boulevard next to Waterworks Park. Both locations, you get a free car wash. Visit us today. Home with a friendly oil change.
Premier, your friendly oil change. Premier, your friendly oil change.
Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-501-3689 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-501-3689 for your free author submission kit. Again, 800-501-3689.
Are you drowning in IRS tax debt?
I owe the IRS $37,000.
Get ready for a toll-free hotline. Take advantage of new IRS tax forgiveness programs that may protect you from IRS collection agencies. They have the power to garnish your wages, put liens on your property, and levy your bank account. Civic Tax Relief can help protect you from the IRS.
Civic Tax Relief basically represented me against the IRS, and by the time everything was completed, I didn't owe the IRS anything.
Find out about the Fresh Start program that is now available through Civic Tax Relief. Civic Tax Relief's special tax hotline can help you discover all the relief programs available for free.
I would recommend anyone who has a tax problem to contact Civic Tax Relief.
Just call 800-841-0908. 800-841-0908. Don't wait. Call now. 800-841-0908. 800-841-0908.
Remember that time there was this guy? His name was Judge Brett Kavanaugh. And there's a trial in the Senate. Not a trial. It was a hearing for him, right? A confirmation hearing for him in the Senate, in the Judiciary Committee. And everything was going fairly swimmingly. And then things went sideways. And the way they went sideways is that a woman came forward named Christine Blasey Ford, and she said that some four decades ago that this person had allegedly attempted to rape her at a party. And nobody came forward with any corroborating details. She herself could not say the night. She herself could not say where it was. She herself improperly named the people who were there, all of whom denied having been there. Her allies attempted to pressure some of the witnesses at this thing. That did not stop Alyssa Milano, star of the magnificent, unparalleled TV show Charmed. It did not stop Alyssa Milano from showing up and like wearing Handmaid's Tale outfits and sitting behind Brett Kavanaugh because hashtag Me Too, ladies, hashtag Me Too. And when people like Alyssa Milano were asked specifically about, you know, this thing called due process, where you have to provide evidence of an allegation to make us take it a little bit more seriously than the mere allegation itself. It was, this is because you just don't believe all women. If only you believed all women. If only you weren't a vicious sexist trying to cudgel all women into being childbearing sows, then you would have just accepted at face value any accusation made about any man anywhere. Well, speaking of hypocrisy, it turns out that there is a woman who has now come forward, and she's accused the former vice president of the United States of a sexual assault. And so this woman, his name is Tara Reid, not the actress, different person. She was an intern for for Biden's office, and she alleges that Biden basically pushed her up against a wall and then tried to go under her skirt and actually touched her genitals forcibly. And then when she told him not, then he sort of backed off. Well, Alyssa Milano is a big backer of Joe Biden, and she did a radio show in which she explained why she had not spoken out about the sexual assault allegation. It turns out that Believe All Women goes completely by the wayside as soon as it's somebody that she likes. So here was Alyssa Milano explaining why she was not going to give any credence to the allegations. The obvious answer is she's not giving credence to the allegations because she doesn't like the allegations.
So I believe that even though we should believe women, and that is an important thing, and what that statement really means is, like, you know, for so long the go-to has been not to believe them. So really we have to sort of societally change that mindset to believing women, but that does not mean at the expense of not, you know, giving men their due process.
What now? Wait, did she just stumble over due process? It's like she was walking along the road and there was a due process right there and boom, she just stumbled right upon it. Who could have suggested long ago that due process would have been a good idea? Well, not Alyssa Milano. Right. She actually continued to say, investigate situations. It's got to be fair in both directions. So I've been very vocal about Biden and my support for him. I've known him for a long time. I did my due diligence because part of it was that the article that sort of stood out to me was that Time's Up decided not to take the case. Well, so what if Time's Up decided not to take the case? Does that mean that the woman is lying? What interest does she have in lying? We were told that Christine Blasey Ford had no interest in making things up, that there was no possibility she was misremembering, that there was no possibility at all that memories from 40 years ago are vague or confusing or anything like that. It was crystal clear in her memory, and other allegations, which required lawyers to basically convince people to go out and say things. Right? There's another allegation where a woman had to meet 6 times with her lawyer in order to accuse Brett Kavanaugh of something. That was perfectly good evidence that Brett Kavanaugh was indeed a rapist. A little bit more on that in a moment. But first, a word from our sponsor. Gang, I gotta tell you, Daily Wire membership, it's the only way you should be viewing our content. You are missing all the best features if you are not a member. Right now, using promo code Shapiro, you get 10% off any member plan you choose. What makes membership so great? Well, members get our articles ad-free, access to all of our live broadcasts and show library, the full 3 hours of The Ben Shapiro Show, select bonus content, access to the mailbag, and more. Plus, our new all-access tier gets you into exclusive live online Q&A discussions with me, Andrew Klavan, Matt Walsh, and Michael Moles, plus Daily Wire writers and special guests. And don't forget, you'll also get the greatest of all beverage vessels, the Leftist Tears Tumbler. Yes, you get all of those wonders, plus 10% off when you use promo code Shapiro. Stop depriving yourself. Come join the fun. A membership is going to make you just the happiest person on earth. And if it doesn't, well, you know, that's life. Stop depriving yourself. Come on over. Join us at Daily Wire and become a member right now with promo code Shapiro. Get 10% off. She says, I don't just feel comfortable throwing away a decent man I've known for 15 years in this time of complete chaos without there being a thorough investigation. I'm sure that the mainstream media would be jumping all over this as well if they found more evidence. So I'm just staying quiet about it. I sent the Me Too tweet over 2 years ago. I never thought it would be something that was going to destroy innocent men, right? We don't want that to happen either. So we have to find this balance in the Believe Women movement and also giving men their due process, realizing that we're destroying lives if we publicly don't go through the right steps in order to find out if an accusation is credible or not. Okay, in September 2018, here's what she had to say, Alyssa Milano. Let me be as clear as possible. I believe Christine Blasey Ford. I demand our senators vote to reject Brett Kavanaugh as the next justice on the Supreme Court. Every person who refuses to loudly and openly reject Brett Kavanaugh's nomination is telling every generation of Americans that an alleged abuser's career is more valuable than a survivor's humanity. The highest court in our land is no place for an alleged sexual offender to sit. How about the White House? How about the White House? Is that a good place for an alleged sexual offender to sit? And also, it seems to me that if this is the standard for Brett Kavanaugh, it should be the standard for you. But apparently not. Apparently, shocker. Shock of shocks, Alyssa Milano is a giant hypocrite, and the Me Too standards only apply to people that we don't like. Everybody else we do like, well, at that point we just call them trailer trash, people who, if you drag a $100 bill through a trailer park, then you pick up people like this, which is what James Carville suggested about the alleged victims of Bill Clinton. So, yes, Me Too and due process. Alyssa Milano rediscovering due process. Pretty delicious. You're listening to The Ben Shapiro Show.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra. With White House officials pointing to hopeful signs the spread of the coronavirus could be slowing, President Trump says he's assembling a group that'll help him decide when the country should reopen.
I call it the Opening Our Country Task Force, or Opening Our Country Council, so we don't get it confused with Mike's task force, which has done so great. And we're going to have the great business leaders, great doctors. We're going to have a great group of people.
During his daily coronavirus briefing today, the president says he will not reopen the nation until it's safe.
I want to get it open as soon as possible. This country was meant to be open and vibrant and great, not where people are, you know, staying. And,
are you
no, I'm not. I am. I would love to open it. I'm not determined anything. The facts are going to determine what I do. But we do want to get the country open. So important.
Mr. Trump says this is going to be the biggest decision he's ever had to make. Federal Health and Human Services Department says it's releasing the first $37 billion in grants provided by the stimulus bill to help keep the U.S. healthcare system operating. A Treasury Department watchdog has sided with Secretary Mnuchin's decision not to provide Mr. Trump's back tax returns to Congress.
Richard Delmar is the acting Inspector General for Treasury and found the department processed the tax return request properly upon legal guidance from the Justice Department. He found Secretary Mnuchin decided not to provide tax information based on the Justice Department's advice. The Justice Department legal opinion held in part that Democrat Ways and Means Committee Chair Richard Neal made a request for tax returns that lacked a legitimate legislative purpose and was an unprecedented use of congressional authority. Delmar's letter in response to Neal and Ranking Member Kevin Brady did not take a position on the merits of the Justice Department's opinion. George Bonzani reporting.
More news and analysis at townhall.com.
Gold. It's soaring. Are you missing it? If you have an IRA or 401k, you probably are. Less than 1% hold physical gold. We've been told by Wall Street it's for crazy people. Really? What's crazy about an asset that beats stocks 2-1? I'm Adam Baratta, national best-selling author of the book Gold is a Better Way, owner of Advantage Gold, an Inc. 5000 member, and highest-rated gold IRA firm in the world. Gold is booming because gold is really about debt, and global debt is a pandemic. If you have an IRA or 401k, I want to give you my book for free. That's right, free. Text GOLD to 49776. That's the word GOLD to 49776. Learn why gold will outperform pumped-up stocks from this point forward. Turn your IRA into a wealth growth machine. Text the word GOLD to 49776. It's time to stop being crazy. Text GOLD to 49776.
Consumer prices fell 0.4% in March. Jeremy House reports it's the largest decline in 5 years.
The decline reveals the downward pressure that the coronavirus pandemic is exerting on the cost of gasoline, airfares, hotel rooms, and other goods and services. The Labor Department says last month's decline was the largest monthly drop since January 2015. Consumer prices rose a slight 0.1% in February.
Energy costs slid 5.8%, with gasoline prices falling 10.5%. Airfares plunged 12.6%, while hotel and motel prices dropped nearly 7%. The travel industry has been hit hard by the shutdown of much of the country because of the coronavirus. The company that runs Coach, Kate Spade, and Stuart Weitzman stores extended the closure of all locations in North America and Europe by 2 weeks to April 24th. Breaking news and analysis, townhall.com. British Health Secretary Matt Hancock says Prime Minister Boris Johnson appears to be recovering.
I'm very happy to report that the Prime Minister's condition continues to improve. He wants to personally thank the whole clinical team at St. Thomas's for the incredible care that he's received. His thoughts are with all of those who've been affected by this terrible disease.
The 55-year-old Johnson spent 3 nights in the intensive care unit at a hospital in London after his COVID-19 symptoms worsened. He was moved back to a regular ward Thursday evening to continue his recovery. The Prime Minister's father says his son needs time to recover from the coronavirus and is unlikely to be back at work anytime soon. This as millions of Britons began an Easter holiday weekend in lockdown, and the UK recorded almost 1,000 more COVID-19 deaths than the day before. More at townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra.
In these uncertain times, do you need a much-needed break from cooking? If so, let Mary's Pizza Shack take care of you with their to-go delivery, curbside pickup. Mary's is offering to-go beer and wine at a special discounted rate. And as always, they have their famous pizza, pasta, soups, and salads. Open Sunday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m., and Friday and Saturday from 11 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. From Mary's family to yours, please be safe.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has the chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
Welcome back. This is the Ben Shapiro Show. Joining us on the line is Glenn Beck, CEO of The Blaze, host of Glenn Radio, Glenn TV, Glenn Beck Podcast. Basically, anything named after Glenn Beck is probably hosted by Glenn Beck is a pretty good bet. He also has a brand new book out. It is called Arguing with Social as well. Congratulations, Glenn. You won the argument. Bernie dropped out.
Thank you.
So good timing on that. What do you make of the geriatric communist leaving the race?
I am. I'm sending him a copy of the book. He's got plenty of time to read it now. It's amazing to me how the extreme aged are doing so well in the Democratic Party. I don't think Biden is going to end up being the guy, because I think he's fading really, really fast. And I think they're just going to be there's going to be somebody that goes, come on, guys. I mean, listen to him. He doesn't even know where he's at now. We can't have him run for president.
It's possible that. They could have a Zoom convention, and it's possible that he, just like my grandparents, just can't Skype in. He's just trying to Zoom in, and he's, like, hitting the button, and suddenly Joe Biden can't get into the teleconvention. The only person who can get in is, like,
that's
Gavin Newsom.
Okay,
yeah, Gavin, I guess you're the presidential candidate. So, you know, Bernie, what led to Bernie's downfall here? Because you and I had discussed weeks ago the sort of going notion that after Bernie had tied in Iowa, won in New Hampshire, won in Nevada, that he was the guy going forward. And then the Democratic Party really consolidated around Biden after South Carolina, where he won a sweeping victory. So what happened here? Because Bernie, I had been told by Bernie, had created a historic movement and then lost to a person who is not actually sentient. So what exactly happened here?
Mm-hmm. I think what happened was they saw themselves losing horribly with an avowed socialist, a guy who was defending the Castros and Russia and everything else, and they realized we cannot go forward with this guy or it will be a historic loss. And they just all kind of rallied the wagons and circled the wagons around Biden. I've never seen anything in American politics like it. It was extraordinary what they did to make sure that he was not the candidate.
It was pretty incredible. Now, the question going forward is whether the Democratic Party is still Bernie's party, meaning that Biden was sort of the last gasp. It can't be this geriatric, horrifying, nasty communist. It's got maybe we put a nicer face on it next time around. It's somebody who's less off-putting, but similarly wild left. Elizabeth Warren tried that for a little while, and then it turned out that she flamed out when she tried to actually put meat on the bones of socialism. As it turns out, socialism only can be supported via the bones. But what do you think that the future of the Democratic Party looks less like Biden and more like Bernie?
Yes. Not physically like Bernie. I think it looks more like AOC. I think you're going to see, especially, I mean, Ben, when I was writing the book, I thought we were going to be talking about the primaries and, you know, the difference between the free market and socialism. Well, we're talking about coronavirus, but what they're still talking about in Washington is a free market or socialism. All of the things that Bernie had on his dream list is being put on the dream list of all of these bailouts. What the Fed is doing is the modern monetary theory. So we're moving in this direction. And I think Bernie Sanders was more like Barry Goldwater. I think you're going to see the loss of you know, Bernie Sanders now. But it was imprinted on the hearts of a lot of people that grew up with their first memory being September 11th, when the markets crashed and everybody was freaking out. Then the next big crisis was 08, and the banks crashed and their parents lost all their money. And now this one. This looks, if you were born around the turn of the century, this looks like a very unstable system that just destroys people, and the people up at the top just get more power and more money. That's who we have to reach out to and say, look, what every bit of your experience is not what the free market really is. This is not the free market, and it hasn't been like this until we really started tinkering with everything.
Yeah, Glenn, this is what scares me so much about what's going on currently, is, you know, aside from the threat of the pandemic itself and how many people are going to die, what scares me long-term for the politics of the United States is that, you know, I had Andrew Yang on my Sunday special, and very nice guy, but we were talking universal basic income, and his basic thesis is that technology was going to put millions and millions of people out of work, and then you needed to support them via the government. I said, well, there's not a lot of evidence of that. We got a 3.5% unemployment rate, more jobs open than candidates looking for the jobs. Well, one way that you can achieve the sort of universal basic income idea pretty quickly is to forcibly throw 30 million people out of work over the course of 1 month by completely shutting down the American economy and then turning around and blaming capitalism. This was a government-induced economic coma. And I'm not saying that it wasn't necessary. It may very well turn out to be that it was necessary in the time that it was. But I think a lot of people are going to take away from that. Well, if my job went away and then doesn't come back, because most of the jobs that have been going away are blue-collar, mid-to-low-pay jobs, that what choice do I have other than to go to the government and ask them to create some sort of wealth tax on the wealthy and completely destroy the foundations of capitalism on the back of a government-induced economic disaster?
I have to tell you, one of the chapters in the book, Ben, is about technology, a massive disruption of jobs, and technology getting in bed with the government, and the government using universal basic income and also modern monetary theory. While I didn't say it was coronavirus, that's what's just happened. And it is a freight train that is coming down at us. And if we are not informed, if we don't know what modern monetary theory is, if we don't know what universal basic income really is, it's going to be put in just like FDR did all kinds of stuff. When people are freaking out and they're hungry, you can do anything, anything. But the long-term effects of this are disastrous for the free market.
Yeah, Glenn, I could see the aftermath of the pandemic going a couple of ways. One could be that people are so fed up with being cooped in their houses that the glories of socialism have brought along with them, you know, us actually living in basically army barracks or restricted to quarters. And so at the end of this, we're like, okay, no socialism, and also I want to leave my house. So if we were going to get all of the, you know, government largesse, and it was going to be connected with, also, you can never leave your house again, and you're locked in here with your three children, then perhaps at the end of this, there's actually a libertarian moment where we all go, okay, well, I need the government to leave me the hell alone now. Or you could conversely see what you're talking about, particularly if there's a long-lasting recession out of this. Which way do you think that's going to go?
Gosh, Ben, I would love to tell you that I think it's going to go a happy way, but I could see it. Let me give you a case for both. I could see it going when we are finally let out, that the American spirit is just on fire and we produce more than we've produced in a very long time. But I also think that there's a lot of people, including the media, that want this president to fail, and love their love of country is far less than their hatred for Donald Trump. And it's almost as if they're rooting for this to be going on and misery to be, you know, stacked up upon misery upon misery upon misery, that I could see us going the opposite direction as well, because I think there are those people that want this to this coronavirus to be successful at the expense of the country being successful.
You know, I think there are a lot of people who would like to see the impact of the coronavirus, particularly in the economic sphere, magnified. I don't think anybody wants to see lots of people die, but I think that if what people get out of this is a giant growth of government, I think a lot of people will be happy with that growth of government. When it comes to the actual pandemic, Glenn, how do we get out of this? Because right now the data are just not sufficient. We don't know anything, and it's driving me up a wall, because at the same time we're being told trust the experts, the experts are not providing us any level of transparency into how they're thinking about this sort of stuff. They, like when the White House released its numbers, when they said 100,000 to 240,000 people are going to die, they didn't give us a time period. They didn't give us the factorial inputs. And then the studies just keep being reduced. So now we have today the IMHE model, which has reduced the number of expected deaths down over the course of 5 days from 93,000 all the way down to 60,000. So what exactly changed? They won't really say, because they can't really say. Instead, they're just sort of saying, well, it looks like staying at home is working. At the same time, I don't know that anyone in the government has actually set up a plan for us getting back to work. So what do you think this looks like, and how do we get out of it?
You know, it's funny, Ben, because I was just talking about this on my show today, that the government has not given us a tripwire. From the very beginning, I've been asking, what is the tripwire? What are the factors that are saying that we need to close schools, that we need to close businesses, that we have to close? What are those tripwires? And I couldn't get anyone in Washington to tell me what they are. Well, I find myself in exactly the same place. Somebody's making a decision on whether we open this country or not. Can you tell us what it is? Because the way I think this should have been done is the tripwires. They should have said, look, if we have this kind of spread with these kinds of numbers and the beds in the hospital are at this rate, we think that schools should close. We think that, and then you should have to volunteer to do those in your own community, because in my community, my hospital rates are not there. The different things that are happening in New York are not happening here. But at least tell me how you're making these decisions, and no one is telling us what is the president looking for to happen so we can get out. It's like a prison sentence that could end at any time or could last forever. That would be called cruel and unusual punishment.
We'll get to more of that in just a second with Glenn. But first, if you thought the lead up to 2016 was nuts, ain't seen nothing yet. The best place to keep you up to date on all of the insanity is DailyWire.com. If you're not a member, you're missing out on a ton of amazing content and new features. Right now, you get 10% off any member plan you choose when you use promo code Shapiro. There's never been a better time to have the capacity to binge watch over at DailyWire.com. Members get our articles ad-free, access to all of our live broadcasts and show library, the full 3 hours of The Ben Shapiro Show, select bonus content, access to the mailbag, and more. Plus, our new all-access tier gets you into exclusive live online Q&A discussions with me, Andrew Klavan, Matt Walsh, and Michael Moles, plus Daily Wire writers and special guests. Don't forget, you'll also get the greatest of all beverage vessels, that leftist tears tumbler. Again, that is 10% off any plan when you use promo code Shapiro. So head on over to DailyWire.com today. Come join the party, because, frankly, what else are you going to do for the next couple of weeks while you self-quarantine? Head on over to DailyWire.com today. It is pretty wild, especially because, again, some of the estimates that are being put forward when Dr. Fauci said, well, we have to wait until we have no deaths. And I just thought to myself, well, this country has 330 million people. What are you talking about right now? There's not going to come a point where there are no deaths from any particular cause. I mean, if I said to you, we have to shut down the country until all deaths from skydiving stop, you couldn't actually do that, because presumably there will still be deaths from skydiving in a country of 330 million people. Like the attempt to shut down conversation about this very thing, like when Trump says, I'd love to open it up by Easter, and then people are like, well, you know, that's probably not right. Instead of then people just saying, well, maybe the time period isn't right, but that's a conversation we should start to have. It was, how could he even discuss this at this time? Does he just want to, does he want the Correct. Dow Jones Industrial Average to rise at the Correct. Expense of human life? And I keep thinking to myself, like, you have not even established at this point that your policies over the course of a year until a vaccine is developed are actually going to save human life, other than just avoiding the overruns at the hospital. So let's say we avoid the overruns at the hospitals, which, by the way, it looks like we are going to fairly successfully do. There may be some serious issues in New York hospitals, but Cuomo said that he thinks that the ventilators will be sufficient. We know that the hospital beds are already sufficient over there. So let's say that we do that. Now the question becomes, over the course of the next year, till when a vaccine is developed, have you actually lowered the amount of death by keeping us all locked up? Or have you just, you know, created a hardline position for which there is no counterfactual? Because if you say we all have to stay at home and we've saved lives, And I say, well, we won't have saved lives if we do that. Like, there's no way to live in that counter universe. Whatever is the policy that gets implemented. And it's very easy to argue that if we had done it the other way, things would have been better or worse.
You know, I talked to Stephen Moore on Friday, and he had just gotten out of a meeting at the White House on this very subject of how are we going to open this up? When are we going to open this up? He came out pretty depressed, quite honestly. But he came out and he said to me that, you know, the point he was trying to make was, look, you're going to kill for every point of unemployment that you raise. The average is about 10,000 people die. So if we're at 30% unemployment, you're killing many more people than you than would have died with coronavirus.
All righty. We'll talk a little more with Glenn coming up. But first, it's 2020. We've only just begun what is bound to be the most insane year for news ever. Now more than ever, it's the time you need to be a Daily Wire member. And right now you can receive 10% off any plan when you use promo code Shapiro. I mean, like, we got an election. We got coronavirus. You need to be updated on everything going on. What makes membership better than not membership, though? Well, members get our articles ad-free, access to all of our live broadcasts and show library, the full 3 hours of The Ben Shapiro Show, select bonus content, access to the mailbag, and more. Plus, our new all-access tier gets you into exclusive live online Q&A discussions with me, Andrew Klavan, Matt Walsh, and Michael Moles, plus Daily Wire writers and special guests. Don't forget, you'll also get the greatest of all beverage vessels, the Leftist Tears Tumbler. Again, that is 10% off all those goodies when you use promo code Shapiro. So head on over to dailywire.com. Come join the fun. Hang out with us over at dailywire.com. Already coming up, we're going to talk more with Glenn Beck. He has a brand new book, Arguing with Socialists. Coming up is The Ben Shapiro Show.
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-501-3689 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-501-3689 for your free author submission kit. Again, 800-501-3689.
Are your tax problems keeping you up at night? Hi, Tax Owl here from the Coast One Tax Group. If you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS or state in back taxes, take 10 minutes and call Coast One Tax Group. It could save you 93% or more. Coast One Tax Group helps people all across America save big amounts of money. David from California saved $48,000 on back taxes. James and Lisa from Dallas saved $102,000. Call Coast One Tax Group now at 888-337-6949. A 10-minute call could save 93% or more. So who are you going to call? Coast One Tax Group, that's who. See how much you can save. The consultation is always free. What are you who waiting for? Relieve your tax stress today. Call Coast One Tax Group at 888-337-6949. That's 888-337-6949.
Are you drowning in IRS tax debt? Get ready for a toll-free hotline. Take advantage of new IRS tax forgiveness programs. Call Civic Tax Relief for free information now. Find out about the Fresh Start program that is now available through Civic Tax Relief. Civic Tax Relief's special tax hotline can help you discover all the relief programs you qualify for free. Just call 800-841-0908. 800-841-0908. 800-841-0908.
Message and data rates may apply.
What if there were a top-ranked business degree that gave you access to world-renowned faculty, leaders, and mentors, but on your schedule? The W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University is now accepting high-quality applicants for its MBA and Business Analytics Master's degree programs offered 100% online. Learn more about the top-ranked W.P. Carey business degrees online. Text RANK to 79645. Again, that's R-A-N-K to 79645.
My husband, Alex Hussey, was hit by an IED in Afghanistan.
I was point man on foot patrol, and I stopped on the bomb. Lost my legs and left hand in an explosion.
DAV helps veterans of every generation to get the benefits they've earned.
To see Alex learning to snow ski, that's life-changing.
With the right support, more veterans can reach victories great and small.
This has meant so much. Thank you, DAV.
Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
Welcome back. This is the Ben Shapiro Show. We have online with us the great Glenn Beck. He has a brand new book, Arguing with Socialists. You should go check it out.
You know, there comes this balance where if people aren't working, depression, suicide, battery, alcoholism, all of this stuff goes through the roof. And this is what the president was saying when he said the cure can't be worse than the virus. And I don't know where that is, but nobody's even allowed to talk about it. You're exactly right. And it is all because of this irrational hatred for Donald Trump and politics.
Yeah, there is this tendency that whenever there's a crisis, you've got to maximize that as much as possible. And people in the media, who most of whom are retaining their jobs and able to work from home, there does seem to be a vast disconnect between the Twitter world, where people are hanging out and talking politics in their little echo chambers, and, you know, Main Street America, where people are losing their jobs, where they're having their life streams destroyed. You know, I think that we on the right, we tend to talk about, you know, if the economy goes down, then people are going to commit suicide and people are going to engage in, and they're going to die deaths of despair and all of this. But it's not just that. I mean, the lives are ruined without people dying. And if somebody has invested their life savings to start a restaurant, and then you shut them down for a year without explaining to them why you're shutting them down or how they hope to come out of it, and then you expect everybody in America to basically give up the basic freedom to walk outside, which is something that is now happening, right? People are now being pulled over on the street. There's that case in Pennsylvania, the woman being pulled over for the great sin of driving in her car with her just by herself. Like, there comes a point where I thought freedom was actually one of the things at issue here, and I'm willing to, you know, suspend the freedoms for a few weeks here while you get the data, but you got to tell me when the data is coming in, and you got to tell me how you expect to get that data in the first place. It's driving me up an absolute wall, because I've asked the same people that you've asked, Glenn. I mean, I've been talking to 2-3 doctors a day on this stuff. You're getting different estimates from everybody. Nobody is even willing to lay out a hard and fast path for how to do this. Like, you know, Scott Gottlieb, who I think does a good job in trying to lay this stuff out, even he has been very vague about what do you expect in terms of testing and contact tracing. Like, how do you expect that to happen over the course of the next, let's say, 5 months till we get to September, so when there's a second wave, it's sufficient to actually finish this stuff? Like, no one's being practical. It's all sloganeering.
I'm really concerned that this is going to be handled so poorly and there's going to be such devastation that when it does come back in the fall, you're going to have a real problem getting people back into the houses. You're going to ask me to shut down a second time? Are you crazy? You know, I talked to people on the radio today that I asked people, who's filing for business loans? And all these people calling in, they all said what a nightmare it was, how they couldn't, how the banks were trying, but they didn't know what any of the rules were, how, you know, they were applying, but they would have no idea when that money would even come to them. These people are people who are dreamers, who worked their whole lives to be able to save up, did not have enough money to, you know, maybe they could keep their business open for some sort of a crisis for 45 days, but that's the limit, 45 days. They still have to meet all of their bills. They're seeing the banks being bailed out immediately. They get their money immediately. These small businesses don't. And they only get $355 billion. Look, I don't know about you, Ben, but I didn't voluntarily close anything down. My business is closed and shuttered, and nobody's working in my office because the government told me not to do that. You know, and maybe I would have done it on my own. Maybe I wouldn't have. But when the government tells me you have to do it, and then I have to feel all the pain, the big guys get bailed out. You told me. Now I've lost my family business. I've lost all my dreams, everything I worked hard for, and you're responsible? I think there is real, real opportunity for unrest to happen if Donald Trump doesn't recognize the little person.
Well, Glenn, thanks so much for stopping by. Always great to talk to you. His book, you should check it out right now, is Arguing with Socialists. And the argument, at least for the moment, has been won because Bernie is headed off to eat some pudding at his Third Lake house. Glenn, really appreciate the time. Good to talk to you.
Great talking to you. Thanks.
All right, coming up, we're going to be talking with Governor Larry Hogan from Maryland. We'll ask what's going on in his state. This is the Ben Shapiro Show.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Hey guys, I'm Bob the Drop. Welcome to my podcast. Do you like water? If you do, you're going to love me. I'm pure and simple. I'm talking refreshing. Yeah. Spent 500 years in a glacier. The boy was that cold. I never was and never will be tap water. Nope. Bottled at the source, the base of Mount Shasta. Yep, pure and simple. Naturally the best. You can try me by calling 1-800-922-6227. Mount Shasta Spring Water.
Aloha, this is Kevin, operations manager at Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. A professionally cleaned business sends a message to your paying customers. It says you are a company that cares about your image and always presenting the very best impression. Time after time, I've talked to clients who shopped for the lowest price and after a few months realized that their professional image was suffering. They didn't know who was actually coming into their offices to do the cleaning, and they just weren't getting the value they were paying for. Be wary of big-name companies that take your money, then hire unknown contractors to do the work. Since 1987, Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, your local professionals, have been offering the best in office cleaning by our screened, bonded, and insured staff. Take pride in your business and say aloha to your customers with the professional cleaning services from Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. Call 221-5868, 221-5868, MauiBob'sOfficeCleaning.com.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
From the Pacific Justice Institute, this is The Legal Edge, defending your rights as a Christian, a parent, and a citizen. Here's Brad Dickus.
California lawmakers created a new statute in 2018 preventing public employers from disparaging unions. The statute was designed to undercut the 2018 Supreme Court Janus decision, which gave public employees an opt-out right from paying any union dues. Now, seven elected officials in California are suing the California Public Employment Relations Board for violating their First Amendment rights of free speech. Well, Pacific Justice Institute will provide free legal help to any employees who, as a matter of conscience, seek to opt out from paying union dues.
The Pacific Justice Institute provides legal representation to individuals without charge. Learn more at pacificjustice.org. That's pacificjustice.org.
888-337-6949.
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-501-3689 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-501-3689 for your free author submission kit. Again, 800-501-3689.
The COVID-19 pandemic threatens millions. Courageous health workers are risking their lives to protect us all, but many don't have the supplies and support they need. Over the past 60 years, Project Hope has trained and equipped health workers in over 100 countries. Now, as the pandemic spreads, Project Hope is expanding its work in the United States and around the world. To learn more about Project Hope's coronavirus response, visit projecthope.org, sponsored by Project Hope.
Welcome back. This is the Ben Shapiro Show. Joining us on the line is Governor Larry Hogan. He is the 62nd governor of Maryland, overwhelmingly reelected to a second four-year term, receiving the most votes of any Maryland gubernatorial candidate and becoming the only the second Republican governor to be reelected in the 242-year history of the state. His approval ratings are sky high because he is actually a competent governor at a time when such competency is in high demand and low supply. Governor Hogan, thanks so much for joining the show.
Yeah, thank you, Ben. Thanks for having me.
So let's begin with the situation in Maryland. At present, what is the situation in Maryland as far as the number of deaths and the COVID-19 infections?
Well, unfortunately, we're just kind of at the ramping up at the beginning of the curve. We're a couple of weeks behind some of the other hot spots, but in the Washington metropolitan area, if you count Maryland, D.C., and Virginia, we're now well over 10,000 cases. And just 2 weeks ago, we were at 1,000. So, you know, we're starting to ramp up quite a bit.
And when it comes to the sort of resources that are being made available, this obviously has varied widely state by state. My state of California has done a pretty good job marshaling resources such that the hospitals are not overwhelmed. Obviously, New York has been a lot more strained. What's the situation been like in Maryland, and how have you marshaled those resources?
Well, so we very early on, we've been taking it very seriously. So 33, 34 days ago, I declared a state of emergency when we got our very first cases, and then was either the first or second state in the country to close our schools statewide. And we've been taking sort of unprecedented action almost every single day. And we're hoping to stay ahead of the curve so we don't look like New York and that we look a little bit more like we don't want to get as bad as it got in California, but we want to kind of flatten that curve out like some of the states have done more successfully. It's hard to tell exactly how successful all of those steps we've taken are going to be because we're, as I said, just starting up that hill. But we believe that all of the kind of drastic measures we've had to take are going to save thousands of lives in our state and make it not nearly as bad as it would have been. But marshaling those resources, you know, we're just like the other states that you hear about. We're concerned about that surge, and that's why we want to flatten it out. The surge, if everything happens at the same time, if we didn't take these measures, and we'd be overwhelmed in our ICU beds, and we'd have a lack of ventilators, and you know we do have the same issues with a lack of testing and lack of PPE, you know, the masks and personal protective equipment that everybody's dealing with.
Governor Hogan, what sort of information do you have on the general case fatality rate in Maryland? The case fatality rate has been an area of significant sort of miasmatic misunderstanding. People don't understand what the actual case fatality rate is. We don't know how many people actually have the virus because the only people who are being tested presumably are the people who are coming in who are symptomatic. We now know that lots and lots of people are asymptomatic or experiencing mild symptoms and never get tested. And so it's difficult to tell how many people even have the virus, which does make a difference in terms of getting back to normal. Has there been any discussion in the state of Maryland about doing some sort of widespread randomized testing to find out what percentage of the population already has this thing?
Well, Ben, that's an excellent point. And yes, that's what we've been talking about for about a month. One of the first things I did was I put together a coronavirus response team that was made up of some of the smartest folks in our state, epidemiologists and public health doctors, specialists from places like Johns Hopkins University and the University of Maryland Medical System, all of our top health systems and hospital systems in the state. And we're also home to the NIH and the FDA and things like that. So we got some really smart docs who are looking at all these things. And But you're right. Until we get to the point where we can do widespread testing, where all of us are flying somewhat blind because no state is really doing enough testing, and the tests are, you know, while we're all doing everything we can at the state and federal level to ramp up that testing, and we're searching for those tests all over the domestic market and all over the world, but there's not enough. And so we've just increased testing fairly rapidly over the past week or two, but still it's not where it needs to be. And so you're right, we're looking at hospitalization rates and then the number of people that go into the hospitals, how many of them go into ICU, how many go onto ventilators, and then what the survival rate is. Those are numbers that we're looking at just to look at the surge and when we're going to run out of the things and, you know, what our deaths are going to look like. But in order to get back to normal, we're going to have to know, you know, how many people in our population are actually have the disease and are still transmitting it and infecting other people.
I mean, this is one of the most there. Yeah, I mean, this is one of the things that's most difficult is we flatten the curve, and presumably the point of flattening the curve, and it looks like it's being successful not only in New York where the spike was most dramatic, but across the country. We've seen a lot of the models revised downward in terms of prospective number of deaths, which is really, really good news. One of the hard things to tell, though, is flattening the curve doesn't necessarily actually lower the amount of time that people are susceptible to this thing. As we start to release folks back into business areas and into crowds and back to religious events and all the rest, you could see a second wave that dwarfs the first wave, depending on how this works.
Well, Ben, that's also an excellent point, and that's one of the things that you hear folks like Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx talking about. Some of our top docs are concerned about that. The decisions on getting back to so-called getting back to normal or opening up, getting things back open again, is going to be even more difficult than it was to make these, you know, have people make these sacrifices and try to shut things down, because we don't want to go back up and have the spike again. You know, it's hard to get that genie back in the bottle, and we're going to have to do widespread testing. We're going to have that capacity before we can let people go back into the kind of a normal life, or it's just going to spread again. Everybody's done a great job. I mean, look, the numbers they were talking about on a national level and the potential deaths of up to 2.5 million people, and then they lowered that down. Maybe it's going to be 240,000 down to 100,000, and now it's looking even lower because of all the great actions that everybody's been taking. Everybody's been sacrificing, not just, you know, actions that governors have taken in their states, but the individuals who have, you know, given up and to things and the small businesses that have closed down and the individuals that stayed home. I mean, it all made a difference. But it'll all be for nothing if we go back out and we spike back up again in, you know, another month or two.
More on that in a moment. But first, gang, I got to tell you, Daily Wire membership, it's the only way you should be viewing our content. You are missing all the best features if you are not a member. Right now, using promo code Shapiro, you get 10% off any member plan you choose. What makes membership so great? Well, members get our articles ad-free, access to all of our live broadcasts and show library, the full 3 hours of The Ben Shapiro Show, select bonus content, access to the mailbag, and more. Plus, our new all-access tier gets you into exclusive live online Q&A discussions with me, Andrew Klavan, Matt Walsh, and Michael Moles, plus Daily Wire writers and special guests. And don't forget, you'll also get the greatest of all beverage vessels, the Leftist Tier's Tumblr. Yes, you get all of those wonders, plus 10% off when you use promo code Shapiro. Stop depriving yourself. Come join the fun. A membership is going to make you just the happiest person on earth. And if it doesn't, well, you know, that's life. Stop depriving yourself. Come on over. Join us at Daily Wire and become a member right now with promo code Shapiro. Get 10% off. We're speaking with Governor Larry Hogan, 62nd governor of Maryland. When we look at how we get people back out there, assuming that we can ramp up testing to the point where we can actually tell how many people have this thing, what are the sort of metrics that we should be looking for? Is there a formula that's being constructed right now as to how we deal with this? Because we've heard, you know, maybe we go South Korean model where we have widespread testing, people getting their temperatures checked. I'm not sure how realistic that is, given number one, what Americans are typically used to, and number two, you know, the fact that so much of this is asymptomatic and people are walking around asymptomatic, they may not even have a temperature and they may be shedding the virus. How can you do contact tracing in a country of 330 million people? Like, what is the actual plan? Because the down and dirty plan that you know, sort of skeptics have been proclaiming is, at a certain point, you're just going to have to say to people who are most vulnerable, the elderly and people with pre-existing conditions, stay at home and work from home as much as you can, and the kids are going to have to go back to school.
Yeah, well, there's so many different smart people, smarter than me, that are trying to work on these issues, and I hear from a lot of them. We got these top docs who don't all agree either on those, on the answers to those kinds of things. But we had a big discussion on this yesterday, and you know, Scott Gottlieb, who's the former FDA commissioner, is on our task force, and he had some thoughts on that and on reopening and what we needed to do. But it is about widespread testing and contact tracing. And you hear the folks at the federal level, Fauci and others, talking about what would have to happen. But you're right, it's going to be very, very difficult to figure it all out. And I think to a certain extent, like, we sort of ratcheted things up. It didn't all happen. Let's flip a switch and shut everything down. It's not going to happen by flipping a switch and everything's back to normal. I think we're going to have to slowly open up, you know, our economies and our, you know, societies back with more precautions. And, you know, I guess there's some, you know, there's some of the talk at the federal level now is, you know, people wearing masks. There's talks about more continuing social distancing, even if we do get back to work, that, you know, people maintain that 6 foot distance. I mean, people are just not going to be right away getting back to shaking hands and hugging each other. I mean, people are going to be going about their lives differently. Even when we do get back to opening businesses and opening schools, we're going to have a lot more precautions in place. And but knowing where the people that are most vulnerable have the infection, or where the, you know, where that's going to be important. And so we're looking at, you know, the ideas of hiring a whole lot of people to help with contact tracing and dramatically ramping up testing. That's what we're doing in our state, because it helps us be in a better position to make those decisions so that we can get opened up faster. But it's going to take folks at the federal level and the states really working hard to figure this out, along with the great partners in the private sector.
So Governor Larry Hogan of Maryland, I want to ask you about the federal response. So there's been a lot of blame cast at the feds. There's been a lot of talk about what governors could have done better. What do you think the relationship has been like between the federal government and your state and your governorship? And what is the role of the states versus the federal government in a system like we have?
Well, look, I think a lot of this has been somewhat overblown. I mean, obviously, I'm the chairman of the National Governors Association. We have had 12 different meetings in the past 30 days of all the nation's governors. 8 of those were with the president and vice president and their team. So it's an unbelievable amount of communication and cooperation between us. The other ones were just the governors amongst themselves. And there's a good team put together at the federal level that's working hard, but certainly not everything has gone as smoothly as it could at either the federal level or the state level. And I think it would be a lot more productive and helpful. And some of this, you know, there certainly are things that governors are frustrated with, and maybe they express some of those frustrations out loud, and it's sort of blown out of proportion sometimes in the media. But we have really productive discussions with the president, vice president, with their team. We also express pretty directly about the things that we really need or where we think the shortcomings are. But I think it's a lot more productive to talk about what we need to do today and where we need to get to tomorrow and next week, rather than there's really no time to finger point. We can't have anybody saying, you know, who's to blame for what didn't happen last week or last month or last year. It doesn't really matter at this point. It's just, we're all in this together to try to save people's lives. I think we have a pretty good working relationship. I do. And I think the Governors Association does. I think the administration has been trying to improve upon that relationship with all the governors, and I've been really proud of the governors, the way they've stepped up and been leading their states. Everybody's been making independent different decisions, but overall, I think, you know, it's a terrible situation we all find ourselves in, and but everybody's under a lot of stress, but I think everybody's working as hard as they can.
Governor Hogan, really appreciate your time, and thanks so much for what you've been doing in your state. Again, as I said at the outset, and competence is in high demand and short supply, and your competence is definitely a comfort to your state and helpful to the citizens of it. So thank you so much for your time, sir.
Thank you very much, Ben.
All right, coming up, we're going to be discussing the New York Times' take on some issues of botchery that may have happened inside New York State, not on the federal level, but inside New York State, local decision-making that went awry and all the rest. First, if you thought the lead-up to 2016 was nuts, you ain't seen nothing yet. The best place to keep you up to date on all of the insanity is DailyWire.com. If you're not a member, you're missing out on a ton of amazing content and new features. Right now, you get 10% off any member plan you choose when you use promo code Shapiro. There's never been a better time to have the capacity to binge watch over at DailyWire.com. Members get our articles ad-free, access to all of our live broadcasts and show library, the full 3 hours of The Ben Shapiro Show, select bonus content, access to the mailbag, and more. Plus, our new all-access tier gets you into exclusive live online Q&A discussions with me, Andrew Klavan, Matt Walsh, and Michael Moles, plus Daily Wire writers and special guests. Don't forget, you'll also get the greatest of all beverage vessels, that leftist tears tumbler. Again, that is 10% off any plan when you use promo code Shapiro. So head on over to DailyWire.com today. Come join the party because, frankly, what else are you going to do for the next couple of weeks while you self-quarantine? Head on over to DailyWire.com today. All righty, coming up, the New York Times is reporting that Andrew Cuomo in New York, Bill de Blasio in New York, they kind of blew it. Weird that they're not getting asked more difficult questions about it. This is the Ben Shapiro Show.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a...
Hi, I'm Chuck Kenny with Shasta Gas Propane and Shasta Tanks. Many people may not know that we started a propane tank refurbishing business about 5 years ago. We pick up tanks from various propane companies, bring them to our yard in Anderson, where we blast the old paint and rust off, repaint them with a very durable paint, and then install new valves. The tank is just like a new tank. We primarily sell these tanks in truckloads of 45 to other propane companies. I'm telling you about our new business because many of you are installing generators because of the probability of the power being shut off this summer. Shasta Gas Propane now sells standby generators and propane tanks so that you won't be left without power. Give us a call at 365-3793 so we can come to your house and give you a quote on a generator and tank. Again, that's 365-3793.
Programs. Call Civic Tax Relief for free information now. Find out about the Fresh Start program that is now available through Civic Tax Relief. Civic Tax Relief's special tax hotline can help you discover all the relief programs you qualify for free. Just call 800-841-0908. 800-841-0908. 800-841-0908.
Are your tax problems keeping you up at night? Hi, Tax Al here from the Coast One Tax Group. If you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS or state in back taxes, take 10 minutes and call Coast One Tax Group. It could save you 93% or more. Coast One Tax Group helps people all across America save big amounts of money. David from California saved $48,000 on back taxes. James and Lisa from Dallas saved $102,000. Call Coast One Tax Group now at 888-337-6949. A 10-minute call could save 93% or more. So who are you going to call? Coast One Tax Group, that's who. See how much you can save. The consultation is always free. What are you who waiting for? Relieve your tax stress today. Call Coast One Tax Group at 888-337-6949. That's 888-337-6949.
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-501-3689 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-501-3689 for your free author submission kit. Again, 800-501-3689.
Welcome back. This is the Ben Shapiro Show. So it really is fascinating. Donald Trump has been raked over the coals 1,000 times for supposedly getting on the coronavirus bandwagon late in terms of not just rhetoric, but policy. On rhetoric, he was late. In terms of policy, not significantly later than any of the Democrats who are in positions of power. Andrew Cuomo did not declare a state of emergency, a lockdown in the state of New York for a while. I mean, if you look at New York's lockdown, New York issued their stay-at-home order let's see, what was the date on that? They issued their stay-at-home order on March 22nd. Okay, so that was like a week after California did. And so Cuomo was asked about that. He was asked, were you late on the game here? And he's like, no. And the media was like, oh, okay. And they just moved on with their lives. Okay, here's a story from the New York Times. A 39-year-old woman took flight 701 from Doha, Qatar to John F. Kennedy International Airport in late February, the final leg of her trip home to New York City from Iran. A week later, on March 1st, she tested positive for coronavirus, the first confirmed case in New York City of an outbreak that had already devastated China and parts of Europe. The next day, Governor Andrew Cuomo, appearing with Mayor Bill de Blasio at a news conference, promised that health investigators would track down every person on the woman's flight. No one did. A day later, a lawyer from New Rochelle, New York City suburb, tested positive for the virus, an alarming sign because he hadn't traveled to any affected country, suggesting community spread was already taking place. Although the city investigators had traced the lawyer's whereabouts and connections to the most crowded corridors of Manhattan, the state's efforts focused on the suburb, not the city, and de Blasio urged the public not to worry. He said on March 5th, we will tell you the second we think you should change your behavior. For many days after the first positive test, as coronavirus silently spread throughout the New York region, Cuomo, de Blasio, and their top aides projected an unswerving confidence the outbreak would be readily contained. There would be cases, they repeatedly said, but New York's hospitals were some of the best in the world. Plans were in place. Responses had been rehearsed. Excuse our arrogance as New Yorkers. I speak for the mayor also on this one. We think we have the best healthcare system on the planet right here in New York, said Cuomo on March 2nd. So when you're saying what happened in other countries versus what happened here, we don't even think it's going to be as bad as it was in other countries. But now New York City is the epicenter. More than 138,000 people in the state have tested positive for the virus, nearly all of them in the city and the nearby suburbs. Epidemiologists have pointed to New York City's density and its role as an international hub of commerce to explain why the coronavirus has spread so rapidly. From the earliest days of the crisis, state and city officials were also hampered by a chaotic and often dysfunctional federal response. Even so, the initial efforts by New York officials to stem the outbreak were hampered by their own confused guidance, unheeded warnings, delayed decisions, and political infighting, according to the New York Times. So as I say, everyone in government sucks at government because government is not better than you are. Government is just a bunch of normal people with inordinate power over your life. Of course, they screwed it up in New York. And of course, they screwed it up everywhere else. Thomas Friedan, the former head of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and former commissioner of the New York City Health Department, he said, flu was coming down and then you saw this ominous spike. It was COVID. It was spreading widely in New York City before anyone knew it. You have to move really fast, hours and days, not weeks. Once it gets ahead of steam, there's no way to stop it. Friedan said that if the state and city had adopted widespread social distancing measures a week or two earlier, they did in California, including closing schools, stores, and restaurants, the estimated death toll from the outbreak might have been reduced by 50 to 80%. 50 to 80%. New York mandated those measures only after localities and states, including Washington and California, had done so. San Francisco ordered schools closed March 12th, when the city had 18 confirmed cases. Ohio ordered schools closed on the same day. De Blasio ordered schools in New York to close 3 days later when the city already had 329 cases. Bay Area counties imposed stay-at-home rules on March 17th. 2 days later, on March 19th, the entire state of California ordered the same. New York State's stay-at-home order came on the 20th, didn't go into effect until March 22nd, so they were a full-on week after California. New York City as a whole was late in social measures, said Isaac Wisehues, a former New York City deputy health commissioner. Any after-action review of the pandemic in New York City will focus on that issue. It has become the major issue in the transmission of the virus. Everything was slow, said Councilman Stephen Levin, a Brooklyn Democrat, who had called for City Hall to take swifter action. You have to adapt really quickly. Nothing we were doing was adapting quickly. Cuomo has been praised for his informative daily news conferences, and de Blasio has made outreach a priority, but they've acknowledged difficulties in fighting the outbreak. On March 31st, Cuomo said, I'm tired of being behind the virus. We've been playing at catch-up. The governor and mayor emphasized they have no misgivings about their initial handling of the response. So weird. When Trump says that, when you ask Trump, did you make mistakes? He's like, no, A plus. Everybody's like, how dare he say that? So terrible. The New York Times asked de Blasio and Cuomo, were you late on the ball? Which they clearly were. And Cuomo said, every action I took was criticized at the time as premature. The facts have proven my decisions correct. Now, again, he's not totally wrong there. The fact is that nobody knew what the hell was going on, and in the fog of war, things happen. But if we are going to go after Trump for being late on the game, then you certainly have to go after de Blasio and Cuomo for the same thing. De Blasio said, we're dealing with a virus that's only months old, and science changes by the day. He says, hindsight is a luxury none of us have in the heat of battle. Weird, because it seems like both Cuomo and de Blasio have used hindsight to go after Trump. But don't worry, they're doing a great job, and Trump's the problem. Bruce Farber, chief of infectious diseases for two hospitals within Northwell Health, the largest hospital system in New York, said by late January it was apparent that cases would begin appearing in the U.S. He said he and his colleagues realized as they'd reviewed the federal testing criteria during a February 7th meeting, many infected people would not be identified. Dr. Farber said only those with a fever severe enough to require hospitalization and who had traveled to China in the previous 14 days could get tested. He said it was at that moment I think everybody in the room realized we're dead. Yep, correct. Cuomo promised they'd go further than necessary to find connections to the first case in New York, and they didn't do any of that. No one ever did the work. Local officials could only request an investigation from CDC. The agency didn't do it because they believed at the time she had not been contagious during the flight. So, again, the message here is not that de Blasio, although de Blasio is real bad, that Cuomo particularly completely botched this thing. The answer is everybody botches everything because people are bad at things. And that is why we should avoid the whole this is why we should avoid the whole everyone knew everything in advance, everything is planned. Government is Veep, it's not House of Cards, and it turns from comedy to tragedy when the situation is serious. I'm Ben Shapiro, this is the Ben Shapiro Show.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra. Across the country, governors have the tough duty of keeping the people informed of the toll being exacted by the coronavirus outbreak.
New York State is at the center of the COVID-19 pandemic, suffering the most cases, most hospitalizations, and the most deaths in the country. That doesn't mean other states aren't weathering a smaller but just as difficult storm. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards, followed by California Governor Gavin Newsom.
53 new deaths, which brings us to 755.
Sadly, we have 541 families that have been torn apart.
Well, the governors also have to deal with massive layoffs caused by the virus and shelter-in-place warnings. Sometimes they have welcome news.
That is Tim McGuire reporting. Over airlines' objections, the Trump administration is proposing a big chunk of the federal aid designed to cover airlines' payrolls this year will be loans and not cash. Airlines were expecting to share $25 billion in cash grants that Congress approved to help them keep employees on the job for the next 6 months. President Trump marked Good Friday with an Easter blessing in the Oval Office.
Seated at his desk in the Oval Office, the president acknowledged the significance of the Good Friday observance.
Christians from all around the world remember the suffering and death upon the cross of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ.
He was joined by Bishop Harry Jackson of Maryland, who described Good Friday as a dark day in the Christian faith.
Christ stood in substitution for our sin. But the resurrection is our victory.
Jackson read from Psalm 105 before offering a prayer. Greg Clugston, Washington.
The World Health Organization says a new case of the Ebola virus has been confirmed in eastern Congo just 3 days before the country is expected to declare an end to the outbreak there. The new case was confirmed in the community of Beni. News and analysis at townhall.com.
If your family depends on your income and something happened to you, what would happen to them? You need life insurance, and SelectQuote can help you get it at a price you can afford.
SelectQuote found Jacob, 40, who's in excellent health, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for only $19 a month.
Not in perfect health? Don't worry.
SelectQuote found Tanya, 40, who has type 2 diabetes, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for only $32 a month.
We shop companies like Protective, Prudential, American General, and others to find you the company with the best rates. Give your family the security they need at a price you can afford.
For your free quote, call 1-800-880-7474. That's 1-800-880-7474. Or go to selectquote.com. That's 1-800-880-7474.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save.
Get full details on the example policies at selectquote.com/commercials. Your premium could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
Two NASA astronauts said they expect it will be tough returning to such a drastically changed world next week after more than a half year at the International Space Station. Andrew Morgan says the virus has changed routines at Mission Control.
It's changed the way that Mission Control operations worked. They're actually doing handover between shifts, between two different rooms to minimize the contact, but yet here they are persevering, and through their ingenuity and their professionalism, they're going to return us to Earth safely.
Meanwhile, astronaut Jessica Meyer says coming home next week will be different than other returns from space.
It'll still be nice to go back and to see some familiar places and some familiar faces. It certainly will be very difficult for me to not be able to give some hugs to my family and friends.
The pair are due back on Earth on Friday. New Orleans Saints quarterback Drew Brees reportedly will join NBC after he retires. Breaking news and analysis, townhall.com. The Biden campaign prepares to take the next step in the run for the White House.
Now the presumptive Democratic presidential nominee, former Vice President Joe Biden, is ready to start the process of selecting a running mate. Three Democrats with knowledge of the situation tell the AP Biden expects to name a committee next week that will vet potential VP candidates. Biden's already committed to picking a woman. Possible candidates include U.S. Senator Kamala Harris of California, who herself ran for the Democratic presidential nomination, U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth of Illinois, Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, and New Mexico Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham. Mike Cross here, Washington.
Apple and Google are working together on a contact tracing apps for phones to help battle the spread of COVID-19. Phone owners who download the app would have to agree to share data with public authorities. Similar apps already in use in Singapore and in China. More on these stories at townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has a chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
In these uncertain times, do you need a much-needed break from cooking? If so, let Mary's Pizza Shack take care of you with their to-go delivery, curbside pickup. Mary's is offering to-go beer and wine at a special discounted rate. And as always, they have their famous pizza, pasta, soups, and salads. Open Sunday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m., and Friday and Saturday from 11 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. From Mary's family to yours, please be safe.
Talking the models used by governments to determine whether to shut down the economy, the question of balancing economics and public health, and when we finally get back to normal. Kicking it off is Dr. Bob Wachter. He is professor and chair of the Department of Medicine at the University of California, San Francisco, and the author of about 300 articles and 6 books. He is past president of the Society of Hospital Medicine and past chair of the American Board of Internal Medicine. Dr. Wachter, thanks so much for joining the show. I want to start by asking you some basic biological questions about coronavirus. Let's start with the sort of conflicting messaging we've been seeing about face masks. Are they a good idea or a bad idea at this point?
I think the science has evolved in the last couple of weeks, Ben. I think we now better understand that people can have the virus and be asymptomatic and be shedding virus at that time. And so now that we understand that, it is, I believe, marginally safer if everybody wears face masks out in public. I think if people do it, it will become destigmatized the way it has in many Asian countries. It'll be weird. It's going to take a lot of getting used to, but I think while the virus is out there in the communities, it seems like a prudent thing to recommend.
I also want to ask about the hand washing. So obviously we're all doing it. All of our hands are raw and bloody. So when it comes to hand washing, why 20 seconds? Is there something magical about 20 seconds versus 15 or 25?
Not magical. There have been sort of these funny studies where they look at people's hands that have soil or germs on them and wash them for various periods of time to see which ones essentially guarantee that your hands will be cleaned of viruses. And 20 seconds happens to be right, and it just happens to line up with singing happy birthday twice.
So let's talk about the hospitalization rates for folks with coronavirus. So what percentage of folks with coronavirus end up going to the hospital? What percentage of those people end up having to go to an ICU? What percentage of the ICU people end up on a ventilator, or are those coincident? And what percentage of people on ventilators actually end up surviving?
Ooh, okay. How long we got? It's a lot of the answer to that then depends on the population of patients, because we know that older people and people with other diseases before they got sick with coronavirus do worse. So, for example, the very high mortality rates and ICU rates in Italy are partly related to the fact that it was an older population. But if you take all comers, about 80% of people who get the virus do just fine. They, in fact, some of them we now know are asymptomatic through the entire time, but most of them will have a flu-like illness, recover fully, and be fine. About 20% of people will get sick enough, and a decent percentage of them, 15 to 20% of all comers, will need to go to the hospital. Of those, somewhere around a quarter to a third, again, depending on the overall health of the population, might need to go to an intensive care unit. Not everybody who goes to an ICU needs to be on a mechanical ventilator, needs to be intubated and ventilated, but if you can't breathe without it, you do. And then the overall death rate nationally in the U.S. is around 1% of all people that get the illness. If you are unfortunate enough to need to go on a mechanical ventilator in the ICU, the studies vary, but they on the low side, the mortality rate is 50%. On the high side, some of the early studies from China showed a mortality rate closer to 90%. So not everybody who gets sick enough to be on a ventilator dies, but it's a bad thing, and the outcomes are at best 50-50.
So looking across the country, obviously the hotspot right now is New York. We've seen emerging hotspots in places like New Orleans and Detroit. But in San Francisco, you've suggested that the curve has been rather successfully flattened. In Seattle, it looks like the curve has been rather successfully flattened. What do you think is the difference between cities like New York, Detroit, and San Francisco or Seattle?
It's hard to know fully, and I suspect that multiple factors are at play, but here in San Francisco, there was a concerted amount of action by both government leaders and, I think very importantly, corporate leaders. They saw what happened in China, they saw what was happening in Italy, and they took it very seriously. They believed the science, and I think the science is relatively clear, that the best chance that we had to stay safe was early and aggressive action. And the action was sheltering in place. The action was avoiding close contact. The action was hand washing, things like that. And so here in the Bay Area, as early as March 5th, leaders of the big companies, that was Google, Facebook, Salesforce, and others, basically told all their employees to stay home and work from home. Now, they're advantaged in doing that because their employees are all digital and they all have ways of working from home. It's not so easy if you're an Uber driver or you're working in manufacturing or in other places. But that was as early as March 5th. March 16th, the mayor of San Francisco and the mayors of the five counties around San Francisco all issued a sheltering-in-place order, and the governor of California did the same thing on March 19th. Those were earlier than any large areas in the country. So I think it was all of that, and I think people did it. People just kind of believed that this was real. We better pay attention. I think part of that was being on the West Coast. We're particularly close to China. We have a very large Asian population. We saw what happened in China. We took it very seriously. And the second reason, I think, is Seattle was the first part of the United States to get hammered. And San Francisco and Seattle are almost sister cities. They're very similar in many ways. And we saw that. You say, if it can happen in Seattle, it can happen here. So I think and then there's just some luck. I think that, you know, New York may have gotten unlucky. There are places where it just breaks out. And even if you did all the right stuff, you're still going to have a big problem. But I think those actions really did make a difference.
So we've been relying very heavily on the models to determine exactly what we ought to do here. One of the questions about the models has been exactly how far they extend. So the IMHE model from the University of Washington has been heavily used as sort of the source for we're going to experience maybe up to 100,000 deaths. That model only extends until the very beginning of August. It doesn't take into account the possibility of a second wave. And that raises questions as to what exactly the purpose of the curve flattening is. So on the one hand, obviously, we want to flatten the curve so that we don't exceed the medical capacity that is out there for ventilators or for ICU beds. On the other hand, if there's going to be a second wave in the fall and we are all going to get it, and how do we calculate exactly when it is worth it to go back to work, considering that the economy is taking unprecedented hits right now, 10 million people unemployed in the last 2 weeks?
Yeah, it's a brutally difficult question. I'm not going to accept the idea that we're all going to get it. Particularly for myself, being over 60, I'm in one of the risk groups, so I can't go to sleep at night buying that it's inevitable that we're all going to get it. I think what we are trying to do is tamp this thing down as much as possible so that hopefully it then dies down during the summer. There's some seasonality about it. So that then when it comes back in the fall, which is likelier than not, we're prepared for it. We know what to do. We can immediately institute the kind of public health measures that this time I think we instituted on the late side. We have widespread testing available so that we can aggressively find people that have it early and quarantine them and isolate them from the rest of the public. And all of this, I guess if this went on forever and we never found a vaccine, then there is a good chance that ultimately probably we wouldn't all get it. There's this thing called herd immunity that when you reach a certain amount of the population who's gotten it and has antibodies, it begins to die out. But that's 70 or 80% of the population. So that's a pretty nasty vision. The hope is we tamp this thing down over a long enough time that, yes, we don't overwhelm the healthcare system, but more importantly, we come up with treatments or vaccines and can get rid of this thing once and for all.
I guess one of the difficulties in the modeling is because so few of the models extend out a full year, and because there are so many variables, it's difficult to see exactly what the sort of counterfactuals are in the various assumptions. So you have the assumption where we do nothing and 2.2 million people die, but it's difficult to see, okay, we have over the course of a year, not the course of 3 months, over the course of a year, how many people die if we engage in social distancing and mask wearing for people who are under the age of 60 or 65, people who are 65 shelter in place to the best of their ability. We isolate people who are in old age homes and have inherent vulnerabilities. What is the counterfactual to that, or lock down for 3 months and then do it? There's so many variables. It's hard to tell, like, what is worth it at this point. So what do you think emerging from this looks like, and when do you think we start to emerge from this?
Yeah, I mean, we need to put our best minds and our best models to this to help guide us as to what the right thing to do is. There is no question that a stance like we now have in California, increasingly around the country, that everybody stays at home and the economy shuts down, can't be our stance forever. That can't possibly work. And eventually, there will be so much harm from that that you begin having to weigh the harm from the virus against the harm from the economy and the harm to health from people not going out and getting health care. There are competing demands here that we've got to be thoughtful about. I'll tell you a quick metaphor for that, which is at UCSF, where I work. We prepared for a New York-like surge. We have not seen it. We completely canceled all surgeries, essentially, unless it was absolutely a hyper-emergency, for a couple of weeks. We're now beginning to open up to do more urgent surgeries. And that's because we have, at some point you say, all right, we're not seeing the same kind of surge. We need to take care of other people. And so there's a balancing act that we all have to do. It appears that the best models seem to say that sometime in the next 4 to 6 weeks, and it depends on how prevalent it is in your community and how much of a spike you had, because you come down faster if you had a big spike, the rates of and the prevalence of the virus will go down in communities to the point that we can begin entering a new phase where we begin to relax some of the strict standards that we have now, begin to let people go out. But the key thing there is going to be testing and contact tracing, which we haven't done very much of. When you have tens of thousands of cases, you can't do contact tracing. It's overwhelming the system. But if you can tamp this down, my analogy is that of a wildfire, that you have tamped down the worst of the wildfire, and now you're out there looking for embers. And you see an ember, and it pops up, and you stomp on it and make sure that it doesn't spread. So we can, I think, reach that kind of a mode where we've tamped it down so it's not rampant in the community. Hopefully it goes away, or mostly goes away over the summer. And by the time it comes back in the fall, we're ready for it. If someone has any symptoms, we immediately test them. We're checking people's temperatures. People probably are still wearing masks. And if we find a case, those people get isolated, separated from the community, probably, or at least we consider separating from their families as well, and that we can keep this thing at a low enough level that then there is time to go ahead and find the vaccine and the treatments.
So given the variability in the models and given the fact there was an article in the Washington Post talking about how even the White House's estimate, 100,000 to 240,000 dead, it was completely vague. We have no idea over what term even they were talking about. We don't know what the factors were in coming to those statistics. So I've been asking sort of a wide variety of people to ballpark where they think we are over the next year, given the fact that there seems to be pretty wide consensus that we're going to have to tranche people up back into the workforce by mid-May, perhaps by June at the very latest, that this cannot last forever. So if that is what happens, if we start to test people, move people back into circulation, isolate people who are most at risk, tell people to hunker down until there's a vaccine if they are really truly the most at risk, if we do that, what do you think the numbers look like? Do you think it looks like 100,000?
Well, I believe the models. I think 100,000 is looking like the minimum, and that is extraordinarily tragic if you think about what that means. We're seeing New York but New York is just the leading edge of what we are likely to see in Detroit, New Orleans, potentially Florida, a number of other cities, Illinois. And so, if it's 90,000, it's still pretty terrible, but I think it is a big number. My confidence that the fall will not be as bad as the spring is that I think we're smart enough to have learned the lessons of this, that it's awfully hard to tell people to disrupt your life and basically screw up the economy based on a theory or based on something that's happening in China. Once it's happened in New York, once it's happened in big cities, I think people get it. This is the real deal. I think we will take the kind of actions. I think science will move quickly. I think we will find treatments and vaccines. And almost as importantly, new technology ways to track cases and follow people. If you look at what happened, it's hard to know whether the numbers coming out of China are right, but what's happened in prior epidemics, what the experience in Korea, for example, seems to show that after that initial spike, if everybody gets their act together, we can keep this thing at bay to a large extent. And the analogy, I think the people always say, well, there was a big surge in the Spanish flu. Well, yes, but the Spanish flu, think about what they had to do tracing. There were no treatments. There were no vaccines. There was no Zoom. There was no Netflix. And you're telling people to stay at home. I think our ability to weather this and act responsibly and get and communicate effectively is massively better today than it was 100 years ago. So I don't think the fall will be as bad as it's been and will be in the spring.
You're listening to The Ben Shapiro Show.
For the safety of students, families, and teachers, schools across our country are closing.
School closures can have significant and lasting consequences, particularly for vulnerable students, students who may face hunger, homelessness, and even trauma.
That's where our organization, Communities and Schools, can help. For years, we've had caring adults inside schools helping these students stay in school.
Now, we are taking our work beyond the school walls. Our caring adults are delivering meals, providing household supplies, connecting kids with online classrooms, and using technology to maintain the one-on-one relationships we know can transform the lives of students and their families.
Communities and Schools, going wherever we are needed, doing whatever it takes to empower students to succeed in school and in life.
To see how you can help kids succeed, visit communitiesandschools.org.
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-501-3689 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-501-3689 for your free author submission kit. Again, 800-501-3689.
Are you drowning in IRS tax debt? Get ready for a toll-free hotline. Take advantage of new IRS tax forgiveness programs. Call Civic Tax Relief for free information now. Find out about the Fresh Start program that is now available through Civic Tax Relief. Civic Tax Relief's special tax hotline can help you discover all the relief programs you qualify for free. Just call 800-841-0908. 800-841-0908. 800-841-0908.
If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes, you need a new start. Our New Start program will stop collection efforts, remove any liens the IRS has in place, and help you reduce your back taxes by as much as 80%. That's right, 80%. Call 1-800-312-9970. Let the professionals at Coast One Financial Group fight to get you the new start you deserve. If you owe at least $10,000 to the IRS and need a new start on your back taxes, call 1-800-312-9970.
Message and data rates may apply.
What if there were a top-ranked business degree that gave you access to world-renowned faculty, leaders, and mentors, but on your schedule? The W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University is now accepting high-quality applicants for its MBA and Business Analytics Master's degree programs offered 100% online. Learn more about the top-ranked W.P. Carey business degrees online. Text RANK to 79645. Again, that's R-A-N-K to 79645.
Dr. Walker, I want to do a quick lightning round. I have five questions for you. So, number one, what do you see as the actual sort of end date for the crisis? Well, two end dates. When does life go back to normal, either post-vaccine or not? And when do we actually start to emerge from the groundhog holes that we've been burrowing in for the past?
It's anybody's guess, but I'm guessing that, you know, a May to June, probably mid-May is the best estimate of being able to come out of our burrow and get back to something that resembles more closely resembles normal is right. And in terms of when we reach a time that things are truly back to normal, the best estimates for a vaccine are 12 to 18 months. And the minute people find it, it's not trivial to get it into the arm of 350 million people. So, you know, you got to think it's 18 to 24 months.
So question number two, with all that said, what does America look like in 6 months? I mean, are we still presumably social distancing? Is everybody wearing masks? What do you think that American life looks like 6 months from now?
I think masks are going to become a norm. I don't know if it'll be quite like Tokyo or other places in Japan where it is absolutely the norm, but you're going to see a lot of people wearing masks. I think people are going to be cleaning their hands incessantly. I think people are going to keep a distance from one another until, and it may vary community by community. If there are no cases in your community, it may be reasonable to loosen that a little bit as long as you have very active case finding. And if you do find a case, then you begin to do the contact tracing and those sort of things. But in communities where there still is virus in the zeitgeist, I think you are going to see people walking around with masks, keeping their distance, and cleaning their hands religiously, and I think that's the right thing to do.
What should America do? What are the big steps that we can take to prevent the next pandemic? Because this obviously is not the first, and it will not be the last.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at how well some of the countries in Asia reacted, it was in large part because they had a playbook that they could pull off the shelf. And they had a national strategy for dealing with this. And the national strategy included what should the population be told and what do they need to do. And it can't be a patchwork of you do it this way in this city, you do it this way in this state. It really has to be a national strategy because this thing permeates state and city lines. It goes to red and blue states. It's got to be a uniform playbook. It has to include a testing strategy. And part of the challenge here was, you know, we don't have a way of getting testing throughout the entire country. So we have to have a rapid fire way. Somebody at CDC has to be able to, obviously with the White House and with the health leaders, has to be able to push a button and say, if there's been an outbreak in this place and it looks awfully like coronavirus and here's the playbook, let's roll it out. And I think at least if it happens in the next 5 or 10 years, I think people will remember this and believe it. Happens 20 or 30 years ago from now, people will forget this and we'll go through the same trauma, I'm afraid.
So how should we treat the government of China after this? Obviously, the government of China not only prevaricated about the virus at the beginning, they openly lied to the WHO. They said there was no human-to-human transmission. They knew better. Obviously, they've been using some of their propaganda efforts to actually suggest that the United States put out the virus. How should the world community be treating China in the aftermath of this from a health perspective?
Well, I think this shows how interconnected we all are, and I'm not a diplomacy expert, so it's difficult for me to know how we should treat them. But I think what it has made clear is that we can't completely isolate from one another. The borders are permeable. A virus that starts in China is going to end up here and vice versa. China reacted late and didn't do some of the things they should have done. On the other hand, once they reacted with an aggressiveness that I think probably saved a bunch of lives in China and may have saved a bunch of lives around the world. They did things that we're not capable of doing and we shouldn't be capable of doing in terms of what an authoritarian regime can do. But in some ways, I think I can understand us being unhappy with them and that influencing our relationships. On the other hand, it just shows how extraordinarily interconnected all the countries are. And if we isolate from one another, it doesn't work. The virus gets through and we have to work together better.
And finally, the measures that everybody is taking, you mentioned before that we're going to be wearing masks for a while. Is there ever a point where we go back to full normal, meaning like giant events, 60,000 people at baseball games? I sort of think at this point that all mass events are basically going to be canceled until there's a vaccine. Are all the measures we're taking right now temporary or permanent?
I really hope they're not permanent. My son works for the Atlanta Braves, and I can't imagine that we're never going to go to a baseball game again. That's too hard to even imagine. I gotta think that this is we'll be back to something resembling normal in a couple of years.
Well, Dr. Walker, I really appreciate your time, and as I've been saying to folks, stay safe in there because we can't be out there. Really appreciate
you as
well. It, sir.
Thank you.
This is the Ben Shapiro Show.
KCNR is proud to announce that we are now live at 96.5 FM, as well as online, and as always, heard on 1460 AM. Weekday mornings, wake up with the Sue McClain News Hour, followed by Free Fire Radio, your talk radio station at the epicenter of change in downtown Reading. 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, the conscience of the nation. Noon to 3, find your financial peace with Dave Ramsey. 3 to 6, the hard-hitting constitutional expert, Mark Levin. Monday through Thursdays at 6 p.m., local shows feature everything from the paranormal to pop culture to unsung heroes of our area. 7 to 9, Ben Shapiro with an expanded program that brings the issues of the day to your radio. And finish your weekday with the Chris Plant Show, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. KCNR. Now on 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, and always online. More than ever, we're your locally owned, community-connected talk radio.
For over 45 years, Clyde's Home Entertainment is the place people turn to for locally owned, expert advice on electronics that turn your home into a theater. Clyde's goes the extra mile for their customers. They have a huge selection of audio and video accessories and equipment. Whether it's the latest 4K television or a hard-to-find accessory, Clyde's is the place for all your home electronic needs. Clyde's is a full-service dealer for Samsung, Klipsch, Yamaha, LG, and more. They offer full-service Dish Network. Be sure to ask about the current monthly specials. The original, and still the best, Clyde's Enterprises, 1250 Hartnell and Reading. They have it all. 221-4144. That's 221-4144. Clyde's.
For many people, their faith, their family, and their health are the most important things in their life. Every day, the work that I do influences these things. Children go to college, couples move into their first home, people retire, businesses start, and charities are supported. All of this in part because of the work I do. I can make complicated things clearer so people understand them. I can solve problems and find solutions. People need someone to put their interests first. And for many people, I am that someone. I can lend an ear, stand with you during life's ups and downs, and provide that advice at just the right time. That's why I love my job. That's why I'm a financial advisor, Susan Eastman, with Wells Fargo Advisors in Redding, California, 243-7561. Once again, this is Susan Eastman with Wells Fargo Advisors. I'd love to be your financial advisor. Please give me a call at 243-7561.
Alan Gordon here, Coach Master Collision.
Thankfully, it appears that Coach Master Repair is an essential business and fully prepared to repair any minor or major damage to your vehicle. With the invasion of the coronavirus, Coach Master is taking all precautions for the safety of our employees and our customers. We have closed all traffic through our lobby to ensure proper social distancing and will be disinfecting your vehicle upon arrival and before delivery. With the effects and response from the virus, we feel fortunate to be able to maintain all of our employees. They will be here to provide all services required for a proper and complete repair. These are uncharted territories. Let's all work together for a full, safe, and prosperous recovery.
And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Remember Coachmaster on Eastside Road, serving the Redding community since 1969. Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Again, 800-501-3689.
In January of 2017, I was diagnosed with acute lymphoblastic leukemia.
And within 24 hours of that diagnosis, we found ourselves here in Memphis at St. Jude. They knew what they were doing. They knew how they were going to treat her. They laid out this elaborate plan.
We didn't know what the future was, or if there even was a future. But with St. Jude, there was.
Not that long ago, the survival rate was 4%. 4%. But through the work and research that St. Jude does, that's now 94%. And you know how that got done? It's through donations. By people getting behind this mission that no child dies in the dawn of life.
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Finding cures. Saving children. Learn more at stjude.org.
Now that we've heard the public health perspective, let's turn to the economy. Bringing us the economist's point of view is Mohammed El Arian, the chief economic advisor to financial services company Allianz and president-elect of Queen's College at the University of Cambridge. He's the senior advisor at Gramercy and professor of practice at Wharton. He's an opinion columnist for Bloomberg and has authored The Only Game in Town and When Markets Collide. Well, Mohammed, great to see you. I'm glad that you and your family are safe. Thanks so much for joining us. So let me start by asking you about the sort of balance that we have to draw between public health and economic need. There's this weird dynamic that crops up mostly on Twitter where one side of the debate suggests that the economy is real life and therefore we should sort of ignore the public health warnings. After all, is this worth losing tens of millions of jobs and tens of trillions of dollars? And on the other side, you have people who are saying, if we even save one life, then we have to all lock down for the rest of time. As an economist, how do you determine where exactly these sorts of lines should be drawn, how we create these balances?
And thank you, Ben, for having me. Look, there is an inherent contradiction, and that's why you get what you mentioned, an inherent contradiction between what this phase of the health policy is, social distancing, separation, isolation, and what the economy is wired for. And the economy and society are both wired for connectivity, integration. So there is this tension that's playing out, and understandably so. I think you have to think about this sequentially. It's not an either or, it's just a sequence over time. Priority number one is to get control of the virus, contain its spread, treat the ill better, and hopefully increase immunity. Until we get the first two things done, it's going to be very hard to restart this economy without going into a W. You start, and then you have to come down again. And we don't want a W. Having said that, we have to protect the economy, and this stage is about relief, about containing the damage. And there'll come a next stage, which is going to be about trying to return the economy to some sense of normalcy.
So I want to ask you about the relief measures that have been taken in just a second, but you've been looking at the same models that I've been looking at, you know, the models from University of Washington or the Imperial College models. And one of the problems I have in looking at the models, especially when we're thinking in terms of the economy, is trying to figure out when people go back to work is pretty difficult when these models end in August. Like, nobody seems to be taking into account what happens in a second wave. Nobody seems to be suggesting what level of medical capacity will have to be in September in order for us not to go back into that W-shaped lockdown that you've talked about. And so it makes it almost impossible to determine at what point we have a metric of success. From an economist's point of view, what would a metric of success look like such that we could have a permanent return to the workforce for at least a segment of the population?
So, Ben, you've zeroed on an issue that's going to come up, I suspect, in everything we discussed today, which is we don't know. There's lots of things we don't know. We are learning as we go along. This is a shock that was unthinkable. If you happened like me when I was young, when I was your age, I worked on a fragile and failed economy. I saw what that looks like. Most people haven't. And we've never seen a sudden stomp hit us at a level of the country as a whole, let alone the global economy. So we're learning in crisis management mode. We are basically trying to keep a plane in the air while trying to build engines and figuring out what to do with it. So this is really, I don't know what the answer is. I don't think anybody knows what the answer is. The key issue here is to have an open mindset, to be able to make trade-offs and to be honest about the trade-offs we're making, because we're going to make some trade-offs and we're going to make some mistakes.
I want to talk about how long, realistically speaking, from an economic perspective, we can last like this. So we've had a full-on economic stop globally. I mean, the United States, we're going to see unemployment rates like we've literally never seen in American history. We're going to see people thrown out of their jobs. It's going to give the lie to the myth that companies somehow have safes full of cash in their back rooms that they're just withholding from their employees, because everybody's going to go basically bankrupt within the next few weeks, because it turns out that's not how companies actually operate. How long can we just keep floating along on basically taking out a credit card when nobody is going to buy our debt? I mean, it's basically a bunch of countries that are selling their debt to each other at this point. How long is that sustainable before you start to see shortages, before you start to see no underlying economic activity have the sort of permanent significant impacts on the economy that we just can't recover from?
So first, it's going to be horrific. It's going to be worse than anything we've ever seen. And there's no hiding this. And we have to be honest with the American people that we are facing a very difficult economic outlook that will make the sense of health insecurity feel compounded by economic insecurity. And I wish I could have another message, Ben, but that's the reality. Already we've seen 10 million people unemployed. 10 million. We are going to see unemployment rates like we've never seen. And there's nothing virtually we can do about it except if we decide to sacrifice the health issue. Now, the good news is relative to every other country in the world, we can manage this awful journey a lot better. Not smoothly, but a lot better. Why is that? Because we are part of a neighborhood that's being hit hard. So we have better capacity to avoid the things you said, shortages, avoid temporary problems becoming permanent ones. And we've got to get money to people quickly. Now, we're going to make trade-offs that you and I don't like. I can tell you right now, we're not going to like what we're going to do. But in crisis management, you've got to contain the crisis first and then try to clean things up. We have that ability, but it's not going to be perfect. There's going to be a lot of casualties out there. And then you and I should talk later. This is not just about winning the war, and it is a war. This is also about winning the peace. And what we learned in 2008-09, that if you don't win the peace, you come out fragile, and we got to avoid that.
So let's talk now about the relief efforts that have been attempted here. So Congress obviously passes the largest spending package in the history of the world, $2 trillion. The Federal Reserve is injecting another $4 trillion into the system. So for folks who don't understand exactly what Congress did here and what the Federal Reserve did here, what exactly did Congress do? What exactly did the Federal Reserve do?
So the Federal Reserve tried to stop, and so far has been successful, a crisis that originated in health and paralyzed the economy from creating a financial crisis. We came this close, Ben, on a Monday 2 weeks ago to having both a 1930s-like depression and having a 2008-like global financial crisis. We came this close. And the Fed simply had to flood certain segments of the market because the treasury market, the senior market, the mother of all markets, the most senior market in the world was dysfunctioning. And that means that the pipes were clogged. I know we don't pay attention to the pipes, and many people watching this will say, I don't know anything about the pipes, but you know in your house, when the pipes are problematic, you have a major problem. And we came this close to the pipes clogging. That was the Fed. Congress and the administration are trying something else completely. They're trying to stop short-term problems from becoming long-term solvency issues. Let me give an example. A company right now cannot sell anything. If you're a restaurant, if you are cutting hair, whatever, you have no earnings. It doesn't mean you can't cut hair in future. It just you can't do it now. It's a liquidity problem. If you don't deal with your liquidity problem, you go bankrupt. And what happens when you go bankrupt? Lots of bad things happen, and the productive capacity of the whole economy contracts, which means we hit ourselves now and we hit ourselves in the future. That is what Congress and the White House are trying to do. It's not easy because many pipes aren't there yet.
So when we talk about the Federal Reserve buying up commercial paper or backing bank loans, it seems to me one of my recommendations early on was that the first chief response here should be to prevent the banks from being forced to call in all of the loans, from being forced to call in the mortgages, from seeing the sort of stuff we saw in 2007, 2008. Instead, it looks like the government is going to start floating basically direct loans to businesses as opposed to via banks. Do you think it would be better to go via the banks, or do you think that it would be better to start giving out direct loans via the government, as some have called for?
So both, okay? And I think the banks are under pressure not to do what you said. And they have been provided massive relief. Massive relief. They have had constraints on them taken off. I can go through them, but they're very technical. And there's no excuse for the banks not stepping up to their responsibility. And I think they really want to be part of the solution because they were part of the problem last time around.
And when it comes to the possibility of inflation, so a lot of people have been worried deeply about what comes due on the other end of this. So obviously we've been spending out of control for literally decades at this point. We just added $6 trillion presumably to the national debt over the course of about 3 weeks here. The appetite for debt out there has to be fairly low, considering that literally every other country in the world is incurring its own set of debts. So is this going to be a situation where the United States is either going to have to radically raise taxes 2 years from now, or where we are going to have to radically inflate the currency?
So there's three issues here. First, the inflation risk. Yes, it is going up. This period we've lived where we haven't had to worry about inflation, and to the extent that the policymakers did, it was because inflation was too low. That has gone away. We are going to have high inflation coming out of this. That's part of winning the peace, is understanding that we have to deal with this. And why? Because when we restart the economy, which we'll do, you and I will want to buy things much faster than they will be available. So we're going to put pressure. Demand is going to recover before supply does. So we're going to have inflation. Second issue, no, we're not going to have a problem selling the debt. You know, I call it the cleanest dirty shirt. You and I are, you know, anybody's on a trip. The trip is extended suddenly because the airlines don't fly. We can't get to a laundry. We've got to wear a shirt. We're going to wear the cleanest dirty shirt. We are the cleanest dirty shirt by far in the world. So we will be able to sell our debt. We have the reserve currency. However, we are going to come out of this with a really deep entanglement of government and private sector activity. It will be a spaghetti ball then. You and I are going to be talking about this. It's going to be a messy spaghetti ball because all these things are being done ad hocly as crisis management. And we've got to sort that out really quickly. Otherwise, that element in itself, the deep entanglement of government and private activity, will pull down our growth potential.
So can you talk a little bit about that? What specifically, like give an example, do you mean by that sort of entanglement that we should worry about? Because I think there are a lot of people who are, you know, fiscally conservative like I am, who say, well, my goal as soon as the thing is over is to get government the hell out of this as fast as humanly possible, since government obviously did a terrible job preparing for it. And then I sort of believe the government is a giant lumbering idiot, and that doesn't mean you don't need a giant lumbering idiot every so often to intimidate people to stay in their homes, but it does mean that you want it out of a more nimble private sector as fast as possible. What does that entanglement look like coming out of this?
So let's take bailouts, okay? That's a perfect example. So we've already identified Boeing and the airlines as recipients of bailouts. We did so because they were at the front end of this process. there was this notion that they're exceptions. They're not exceptions. They're leading indicators, right? Every sector I know, except for a few, are having a simultaneous destruction of consumption and production. So the line for bailouts is going to be very, very long. So if you embark on a bailout strategy without having clear principle, who are you going to bail out, why are you going to bail them out, how long for, on what term, and what the exit policy is, you end up with a spaghetti ball. And the danger is, now what is that spaghetti ball? Okay, so Boeing survives because of government help. So what's the government's claim on Boeing when they recover? How long should the government be an equity holder in Boeing? Where should it be when it's to other equity holders? None of this has been discussed, and this has got to be sorted out.
Would it be better, in your opinion, to avoid that sort of spaghetti ball if the government were just providing basically zero interest loans to these firms as opposed to trying to grab chunks of them? We saw Boeing actually turn down the possibility of government ownership in a stake. They said, we'll fire people before we allow the government to run our business. If you're trying to encourage businesses to keep people employed, one of the questions I've had about the bill that Congress passed is the interference in how businesses are run, the idea that if you're a small business, that we're going to float you a loan specifically so you can maintain your employment base. But as you said, there is literally no market for your employees to cater to. So would it not be better for the government to provide zero interest loans to companies via banks that can assess risk, and then to just increase the unemployment insurance on the other side so that we are not actually providing incentives for companies to keep people on the payrolls? And then the minute that this thing ends, fire everybody, which is presumably what will happen because the market is not going to recover simultaneously with the end of this pandemic.
So they're trying to stop that by saying if you keep them on, some of your existing loans you're going to get are going to be forgiven. But you raise a critical point. If I was to play it again, you know what? The Monday morning quarterbacking is really tempting, but I've been in crisis management situations. You are making decisions with imperfect information, and you're making it up as you go along. And that's what happened with this $2 trillion package. And having a T ahead of the rest of it makes us really worry, because that's a really large number. It was unthinkable just 3 months ago. Look, you raised two issues that I wish in the next phase, because there will be a next phase, implementation, we think about. One is incentive alignment. You talk about incentive alignment.
Tobacco and Brew, located at 2143 Hilltop Drive, has been an integral part of our community for over 40 years. They have supported the veterans, law enforcement, fire and disaster survivors throughout this whole time. Tobacco and Brew has expanded their walk-in humidor and brought to the North State new lines of fine cigars, pipes, and tobacco products. Additionally, they are offering a pipe bar to try out new tobacco for taste and aroma. Tobacco and Brew is your one-stop shop for any tobacco product and accessories to include lighters, humidors, pouches, and more. Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive.
In these uncertain times, do you need a much-needed break from cooking? If so, let Mary's Pizza Shack take care of you with their to-go delivery, curbside pickup. Mary's is offering to-go beer and wine at a special discounted rate. And as always, they have their famous pizza, pasta, soups, and salads. Open Sunday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m., and Friday and Saturday from 11 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. From Mary's family to yours, please be safe.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Are you drowning in IRS tax debt? Get ready for a toll-free hotline. Take advantage of new IRS tax forgiveness programs. Call Civic Tax Relief for free information now. Find out about the Fresh Start program that is now available through Civic Tax Relief. Civic Tax Relief's special tax hotline can help you discover all the relief programs you qualify for free. Just call 800-841-0908. 800-841-0908. 800-841-0908.
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-501-3689 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-501-3689 for your free author submission kit. Again, 800-501-3689.
Are your tax problems keeping you up at night? Hi, Tax Owl here from the Coast One Tax Group. If you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS or state in back taxes, take 10 minutes and call Coast One Tax Group. It could save you 93% or more. Coast One Tax Group helps people all across America save big amounts of money. David from California saved $48,000 on back taxes. James and Lisa from Dallas saved $102,000. Call Coast One Tax Group now at 888-337-6949. A 10-minute call could save 93% or more. So who are you going to call? Coast One Tax Group, that's who. See how much you can save. The consultation is always free. What are you who waiting for? Relieve your tax stress today. Call Coast One Tax Group at 888-337-6949. That's 888-337-6949.
Message and data rates may apply.
What if there were a top-ranked business degree that gave you access to world-renowned faculty, leaders, and mentors, but on your schedule? The W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University is now accepting high-quality applicants for its MBA and Business Analytics Master's degree programs offered 100% online. Learn more about the top-ranked W.P. Carey business degrees online. Text RANK to 79645. Again, that's RANK to 79645.
So let's talk about the stock market for a second. You've mentioned before you were ahead of the curve, as you very often are on this sort of stuff. When the stock market started to drop and people were saying, now's a great time to buy, you were saying, well, wait a second, because it's going to drop some more. How far do you think that the stock market is going to drop? You don't have to put a number on it, but how long do you think it's going to drop given the uncertainty? Have we reached sort of baseline uncertainty and now the news starts to get better? Or do you think that the uncertainty continues for months and months and months? And is this a buying opportunity, or should we all just sort of sit on whatever cash we have in our hands?
So I think it's the latter. I think it's still time to be very cautious. And I've gone out of my way through my social media and my publication to try and increase the amount of information going to retail investors, a small investor in particular, because the tendency of this industry is to tell you buy, 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 okay? Because they make fees when you buy. Look, go back to the uncertainties. We are just about understanding the severity of this shock. We have no idea about its duration. We don't quite understand in the marketplace that it's going to take time for the relief measures to work. We certainly haven't incorporated in the marketplace that the restart isn't about turning on a button, turning on a switch. And none of these things that you and I have talked about the post-crisis landscape, is priced in.
Mohammed, I have 5 questions for a quick lightning round. So, number one, how should the world treat China after this? Obviously, China did not shut this thing down. They lied to the WHO. If they had revealed this information a month in advance, there are some studies that suggest 95% of all casualties could have been avoided. So how should the world treat China after this? I've heard suggestions from people that I don't think are you know, doable, like we should just cancel our debt to China. How should we deal with China, and what sort of reparations should China be forced to pay for what has been incurred here?
So starting with the trade war, I think we've emerged from this happy talk that China is a global responsible player. China is not a global responsible player. China does not play to the global rules. And we haven't held China accountable for a very long time. We should continue to hold China accountable, and we should do it with our allies. But this is a moment to say enough is enough. We've tolerated intellectual property theft. We've tolerated also, we will not tolerate you being part of the export of a virus. So I think we got to hold China much more accountable to its global responsibilities now that we've allowed it to be part of the global economy.
Will the measures that we are now taking be temporary or permanent? This is my great fear, is that people tend to use crises as an opportunity to confirm their priors. And when it comes to the growth of government, we've never seen anything like this in so quick a time. Are the measures that we are taking now expedient, or do you think that these become a permanent feature of the American landscape?
So I, like you, worry about short-term measures becoming long-term measures. Okay, that's why we have to think about this very carefully as we implement it. Look, that risk is there, and we've got to collectively make sure that it doesn't reach critical mass, because if it does, then our longer-term prosperity will be threatened.
What can we do to prevent, a couple things that we can do to prevent this kind of economic meltdown next time a black swan event hits like this?
So we need to develop three things that we haven't developed. Resilience, the ability to live through shocks, and that starts at the government level, the household level, and the corporate level. Two, optionality, this ability to change our minds as we get better information. Don't get stuck on an old model. And finally, agility. The good news, and I think there are silver linings, when we emerge from this, we are going to have a opportunity set for this country that we have not had before. And we need the agility to respond. It will look different, but we have the best initial conditions, Ben, to respond with agility and be able to bounce back, not fully, but certainly faster than we would otherwise.
What do you think America will look like 6 months from now?
I'm worried. I think 6 months from now, there's a big chance that our economy is still hit hard, that we have pockets of social unrest. And I'm worried. This is going to be a hard journey. It's one of these things, you know, it's like taking your kids on a trip. Even if you're going to Disneyland, if it's an 11-hour car journey, they're going to find the journey really long. And at some point, you're fed up with hearing, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Okay? I'm afraid that that's what it's going to look like. The journey is going to be horrific. And I'm worried that our social fabric is going to be really stressed.
So prior to all of this, obviously, the stock market was at all-time highs. Unemployment was at all-time lows. How long do you think it is before we return to those sorts of numbers?
So on the unemployment side, a long time. Because certain businesses aren't going to come back, and people are going to have to retool. And I'm worried about this. And I hope, you know, I make predictions, and I normally hope I'm right. This time around, I hope I'm completely wrong on all these predictions. I hope it turns out that it is a V, that we simply flick on a switch, and this is just a bad nightmare. But it's going to take a long time. And same with the markets. We've come from a very special period, but we're being hit with a deadly virus that's going to create permanent scars.
Well, Mohammed, I really appreciate your time. I really appreciate your insight. Stay safe out there, or in there, as the case may be. Great to talk to you.
You too. Thank you, Ben.
This is the Ben Shapiro Show.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.
News in this hour from townhall.com, I'm Ron DeRockstra. Optimism at the White House as officials say we may be nearing a peak of the coronavirus cases in this country.
Coronavirus Task Force Coordinator Dr. Deborah Birx is pointing to encouraging signs in the fight against the viral pandemic.
You can see for the first time that in the United States we're starting to level on the logarithmic phase like Italy did about a week ago.
At the same time, public health experts emphasize the need for continued mitigation efforts. And President Trump believes the COVID-19 death toll in the U.S. will be significantly lower than the minimum 100,000 that was projected. Greg Clugston, Washington.
A watchdog found the Treasury Department appropriately handled Congress's request for President Trump's tax returns, which Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin refused to provide. But the acting Inspector General for Treasury, Rich Delmar, also said he had no opinion on whether the advice Mnuchin followed, which came from Justice Department attorneys, was itself well-founded. President Trump addressed the nation from the Oval Office Good Friday morning, talked about how to spend the weekend while sheltering in place.
Though we will not be able to gather together with one another as we normally would on Easter, we can use this sacred time to focus on prayer, reflection, and growing in our personal relationship with God, so important.
Mr. Trump also took a moment to thank the country's health care workers for all they're doing to protect Americans amid the pandemic, as well as Vice President Mike Pence and his efforts in the coronavirus task force.
I'd like to thank our great Vice President and his wonderful wife, who we all know very well, Karen, for the incredible job they do and for their service not only to the country, but for their service to God.
The president also thanked the many Americans who have been sending prayers and thank yous to the Trump family. News and analysis at townhall.com.
Do you have constipation with belly pain, straining, and bloating that keeps coming back? Take the 5-question gut check to see if it could be more than occasional constipation. It could be irritable bowel syndrome with constipation, or IBS-C. Linzess, or linaclotide, is a prescription medication that treats IBS-C in adults.
Linzess is not a laxative. It works differently. Linzess helps relieve belly pain and lets you have more frequent and complete bowel movements.
Individual results may vary. Do not give to children less than 6, and it should not be given to children 6 to less than 18. It may harm them. Do not take Linzess if you have a bowel blockage. Get immediate help if you develop unusual or severe stomach pain, especially with bloody or black stools. The most common side effect is diarrhea, sometimes severe. If it's severe, stop taking Linzess and call your doctor right away. Other side effects include gas, stomach area pain, and swelling.
Talk to your doctor about whether Linzess is right for you. Go to Linzess.com to take the 5-question gut check. That's Linzess.com or call 1-800-LINZESS.
A recent poll finds fans are reluctant to attend games due to the pandemic.
72% of Americans said they wouldn't feel safe attending sports events until there's a vaccine for COVID-19. That was one of the findings of a poll conducted by the Stillman School of Business at Seton Hall University. Asked what they'd do if the leagues resume play, 12% of respondents said they would attend games only if social distancing remained in place. The poll, however, did show interest in sports is still high. 76% said they missed the games and would watch broadcasts with the same interest as before. I'm Gary McKillops.
The XFL suspended operations and laid off its employees. The upstart league, backed by the WWE, canceled the remainder of its season last month because of the pandemic, but promised to be back in 2021. The moves, though, have left the league's future in doubt. The XFL has 8 franchises. Breaking news and analysis at townhall.com. An Air Force base prints face shields to protect against the spread of the coronavirus.
Delaware's Dover Air Force Base is using 3D printers to make face shields to protect against the spread of the coronavirus. The U.S. Air Force said in a press release that more than 70 face shields were printed by a team of airmen at its innovation lab. The lab, known as Bedrock, can produce up to 20 face shields each day. The shields are made of a plastic that's chemically resistant and reusable. The shields include a thin plastic visor as well as an elastic headband. Master Sergeant Justin Pittman says the team making the shields functions like a well-oiled machine. Keith Peters reporting.
Authorities in Maryland say the death of Robert F. Kennedy's granddaughter, Mava Kennedy Townsend McKean, has been ruled accidental after she drowned in the Chesapeake Bay. An autopsy is still pending for her 8-year-old son after the bodies of the mother and son went missing earlier this week. More on these stories at townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Hey guys, I'm Bob the Drop. Welcome to my podcast. Do you like water? If you do, you're going to love me. I'm pure and simple. I'm talking refreshing. Yeah. Spent 500 years in a glacier. The boy was that cold. I never was and never will be tap water. Nope. Bottled at the source, the base of Mount Shasta. Yep, pure and simple. Naturally the best. You can try me by calling 1-800-922-6227. Mount Shasta Spring Water.
Old Cardi, she knew what was happening. Have you seen the meme going around of her and a bunch of people jumping away from countertops and doorknobs and grocery store conveyor belts with Cardi B yelling about the Wuhan virus? She's a lot of fun. Hey, it's Friday, for what it's worth, in the age of the Wuhan Red Death. How is Friday different in the age of the Wuhan Red Death than Friday was before the age of the Wuhan Red Death? We're going to be studying this for years and years to come. Years and years, I say. We are at 888-630-9625, 888-630-9625. You should call in if you have something that you'd like to contribute to the conversation in this crazy world. And I tell you, it is just whipsaw after whipsaw. It's brainlash day after day. Trying to follow this story and stay on top of the numbers is essentially an impossible task because of trickery or incompetence or government stupidity or media corruption or whatever it is. But every day, as I was saying yesterday and I think perhaps the day before, every day you show up and you've got a completely new, not only set of numbers, but a completely new metric by which the numbers are being measured. And all of the so-called experts, I think experts are getting a bad name during the course of this exercise. And people are dying, and it's the Wuhan Red Death. It's a virus, and it's a deadly virus. And Sweden has a completely different approach. You've been hearing all about Sweden. Sweden, I have a piece on Sweden today. And look, the numbers that they're showing are higher than numbers in countries where there are complete lockdowns. However, it's not off the charts. And here in the United States, what we were told, what we were warned was going to happen, and I've been talking about this, and then when the numbers come in low, they're going to say, well, you can thank us for these low numbers because we told you all to stay home and close your businesses. So we have saved tens of thousands, nay, hundreds of thousands of American lives. Have a parade for us. Give us the Presidential Medal of Freedom, and praise us for our great work, because we've been working for decades for this very moment. And now, and honestly, everybody's looking around and saying, well, wait a minute. In Oklahoma, they have no lockdown, and they have lower deaths and percentages. And in California, where they did this, and there's a New York Times reporter, and we're starting to get, and look, this is true, and it's fair, and because we want to be fair. The models are nothing more than models based on hypothetical circumstances which have yet to occur. Right? So it's about predicting the future. Now that we see, and we've seen even Fauci and some of the others say, now that we have actual data coming in, cleverly, we use the actual data. And interestingly, the actual data does not marry up very well with what was hypothesized before all of this became a real-world exercise, right? So what we're saying, is that perfectly clear? I think it is. And what we're watching now is the collapse of what? The experts, of the models, of medical science, of the federal government, the kind of the permanent state, the bureaucracy, the apparatus that's always in place to protect us against things like this. We spend trillions on this. And this time around, they told us there is this dread Wuhan Red Death coming at us out of China. But you can't say that because political correctness and all this stuff. In fact, there are other politically correct stories today as well. In fact, there's an extraordinary story out of New York. They were going to build a field hospital. A Christian group was going to build a field hospital and staff it with doctors and nurses and things. You know, what is it? It's a hospital. It's a big white building with doctors, but that's not important now. They were going to build a field hospital in Manhattan, and now they're not going to, because liberals found out that Franklin Graham said something at some point in his life that they've deemed to be anti-LGBTQ, so they've put the kibosh on the hospital, because saving lives is not really as important as political correctness. But there's a lot of political correctness in all of this, too. And the left is just, I got to tell you, the left is, the truth is never told about them. But honestly, what's going on here, almost all of it is traceable back in one way or another to the left, lefty institutions, lefty individuals, and on and on. And everybody's taking a hit on this. I mean, everybody is taking a big hit on this, because what was theorized, what was projected, predicted, hypothesized, is apparently, thankfully, not coming to pass. Now, as I was saying weeks ago, when the numbers do not materialize, they will take credit for the numbers not materializing, because they will say, I said weeks ago, they didn't materialize because you guys followed our advice and shut down businesses and stayed at home, and that's why the virus didn't spread and why not so many people died. So thank us very much. But I got to tell you, we're all kind of standing here scratching our heads saying, is this really This is it. Is this really the peak? It looks like it's peaked in New York. It looks like New York may be past their peak. Looks like might. Those are key words, okay? There might be, it may prolong, it may go on and on and on. It may have another peak. It may have two more peaks. But it is not the calamity that was predicted. The hospitals are, and look, in New York, they'll tell you that the hospitals are overloaded, that they're slammed, that they're very busy. But this whole thing with the 140,000 hospital beds and the need for 30,000 to 40,000 ventilators, they ended up needing 5,000 ventilators. And then they said, well, that's because everybody stayed home. It's because you followed our instructions. But in reality, the lines don't quite marry up on those claims. They don't quite match up. Because New Yorkers were not staying home, and there's this built-in lag time we keep hearing about, which is true enough, between when people are infected and when they end up in the hospital. The number of hospitalizations projected just didn't materialize. The number of dead just didn't materialize. And I'm very happy that the numbers didn't materialize. But look what happened. Look what we did in the meantime. And we're all scratching our heads and trying to figure it out. And you know who's trying to figure it out also? What happened as opposed to what was supposed to happen? The so-called experts. All of the experts in our government, the experts on television, on CNN, in the media, all of the highly paid network television experts, the doctors and the epidemiologists and the former government officials and all of these people. And then what happened? And the Democrats, meaning the media, are still yelling at the president, why don't you order those 9 Republican governors to shut down their states? Those states are doing fine in terms of numbers of infections, hospitalizations, deaths, ventilators, all of that. They're all doing fine. So this thing, and here we are. Look, it was a week ago, right? That the Surgeon General, I was playing the, well, it was beginning of this week. On Monday, I was playing the audio of the Surgeon General. In fact, I think we have the audio, Michael, of the Surgeon General of the United States, Dr. Jerome Adams, from last Sunday. He was going around last Saturday and Sunday. They were doing briefings, and then he was going on shows, and he was warning that this coming week was going to be our Pearl Harbor. It was going to be our September 11th. It sounded like this.
This is going to be the hardest and the saddest week of most Americans' lives, quite frankly. This is going to be our Pearl Harbor moment, our 9/11 moment, only it's not going to be localized. It's going to be happening all over the country.
And that was this week. That was this week. And look, it is true that a lot of people died from the virus. And it's the Wuhan Red Death, and it's killing people. There is no doubt about it. But it was not the end. And I talked about this on Monday because I tend to take things literally. I said, if you're talking literally, Pearl Harbor was about 3,000 Americans were killed, slightly fewer than, I believe. And September 11th, 2001, the radical Islamic jihadi terrorist attack on civilization killed just shy of 3,000 people as well. So on Monday, I was saying, look, if we're going to take him literally, then what we're talking about is 3,000 Americans, or if you combine the two, 6,000 Americans dying of the Wuhan Red Death this week. And I said, well, that number is quite possible. And in fact, it has been greater than 6,000 Americans dying from the Red Death this week. So it kind of depends, and I made this point on Monday, if you were listening, that if you're taking his words literally, then his projections, his predictions were probably going to be fairly easy to reach, and they were reached. I would say that I don't have to conjecture. More than 6,000 people died last, let's say, Sunday through today, or last Friday through today. More than 6,000 people died. So it is Pearl Harbor and September 11th in terms of the death toll combined. But when you use rhetoric like that, it's our Pearl Harbor, it's our 9/11, it's somewhat hyperbolic rhetoric, I suppose. And while more than 6,000 Americans died in that period of time, I'm not sure it was really a Pearl Harbor or a 9/11, which were single events. And this is a different thing altogether. It's a different thing altogether. Now, that said, More than 6,000 people died in that time frame, and that's not obviously inconsequential. And you can compare it to car accidents and deaths that normally occur during any given week, and that's fine. But this is, of course, on top of all of that, in addition to all of that, and in theory. And now we see perhaps in practice some of them preventable. But what do we do going forward? Is this the new model for the flu season when 60,000 people die? These are legitimate questions to ask, and we'll be discussing this and other questions and issues going forward, no doubt about it, because this has been a great upheaval in our lives. And we've never seen anything like it. I expect we probably won't see anything like it ever again, and that we won't respond to the next virus this way. And this is really a kind of a one-off crazy, crazy episode in our history. It is something that's going to be examined and studied for years and years. And as I've been saying, I'm hearing more and more people saying this now, there will be no agreement after all of this is over as to whether we did the right thing or not. There will simply be no agreement. There will be two camps, and doubtless we'll be divided along political lines as well, because that's just where we are. It's a crazy time. And everybody, I think Dr. Anthony Fauci is going to be tarnished. His reputation, previously sterling reputation, is going to be significantly tarnished by this whole episode. I think Dr. Deborah Birx, who was much less widely known before all of this, is also going to come out of this sullied and tainted and dinged up. And the entire apparatus in the United States government that is in place to prevent/defend in situations like this is also, I think, going to have a lot of explaining to do. And the thing is, I already know their explanation, and that is, we told y'all to stay home, and that's what kept the body count down. So thank us. Give us the Presidential Medal of Freedom. I suspect the two of them probably, I said this a month ago, will probably get the Presidential Medal of Freedom after all of this is over. Either way, any way you slice it. Ron Paul, you remember Ron Paul, famous libertarian, member of the House of Representatives for a long time, presidential candidate, father of Senator Rand Paul. Ron Paul, who has a big and devout following, Ron Paul is calling on President Trump, or the people, that'd be us, to fire Anthony Fauci, to fire him, because this is what's going to happen now. Honestly, there are going to be scalps, and there should be scalps after all of this is over, because what was threatened, what was, you don't want to say promised, what they said was going to happen is not happening. And again, they're going to thank themselves and ask to be praised for ensuring that it didn't happen. Because, it could have been, the first model, 1.5 million, and then the news media is just so filthy in all of this. You know, they're pretending now that there were no models that showed what the models showed, the early models, 1.5 million to 2.2 million dead Americans. And like, oh, nobody believed that, the news media now says. They were hysterical about it and making us hysterical about it. And now former Congressman Paul and former presidential candidate Ron Paul is saying he should be fired. But if you don't do it in a literal sense, the people have to fire him. Said they have to fire him. He's a fraud, says Ron Paul. We got to take a break here. Says Ron Paul, the plan they have is when things are getting back to normal, yes, people can return to work and do things that go to the golf course if they get a stamp of approval, he says. Your liberties are there if you get a proper stamp from the government. He's more and more right about that. Fauci should be fired, he said. And so it will begin, and this is going to go on forever and ever. Crazy, crazy stuff. 888-630-9625. Lot to get to.
There's only one Chris Plant. The Chris Plant Show.
Are you
you staying at home? Well, there's never been a better time to stock up on Omaha Steaks. Omaha Steaks delivers the best steaks in the world. A huge variety of food for you and your family. You're gonna love it. You don't have to leave the house. Right now, Omaha Steaks is offering a limited time stock up sale for my listeners to help make sure that you and your family have everything you need. Just go to omahasteaks.com. Enter the code PLANT. That'll get you more than 50% off your order and free shipping on orders of $69 or more. Stock up boxes don't just include the world famous Omaha Steaks that I've loved since I was a kid and I love to this day. There's also poultry, pork side dishes, no work meals for the slow cooker or the oven, and you can't forget the desserts. Omaha Steaks always delivers quality and safety. Everything is individually sealed for flavor and freshness. These boxes are ready to ship, and again, enter that code PLANT to get over 50% off and free shipping on any order of $69 or more.
Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans and Rocket Mortgage. During these challenging times, our commitment to providing you with the best mortgage experience remains. We understand that hardships may arise, and we're prepared to help. Mortgage rates remain near historic lows. If you think that now is the right time to refinance your mortgage, our home loan experts are available to help 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at rocketmortgage.com.
Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 33.
Geico presents Left Brain versus Right Brain.
I've decided it's a sensible decision to switch to Geico.
Okay, I feel you.
We could save ourselves hundreds of dollars a year on car insurance.
Oh, and then airbrush your Pegasus on the side of our hatchback.
No, we will not airbrush a Pegasus on the side of our hatchback. We will reinvest that savings in a high-yield investment like a mutual fund.
Oh, a Pegasus riding a jet ski. Playing a bass guitar.
I cannot believe we share the same medulla.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
This is Joanne Jenkins, CEO of AARP. The coronavirus continues to affect us all, and we are here actively supporting you and your community. Every day, we're providing trusted information from top health experts, sharing tools to help protect families from fraud, and creating resources to support family caregivers everywhere. As always, you can count on AARP to advocate for you and your family. Join us and stay connected at aarp.org/coronavirus.
He learned to pitch in your backyard. Now his team's coming over to celebrate their high school championship. So you need to patch those bare spots fast. Pennington One Step Complete has a revolutionary formula that repairs bare spots in only 2 weeks or less. Pennington's been trusted since 1945, and now it works even faster. One Step Complete from Pennington. Honest green. Get your lawn ready for any occasion. Head to your local retailer to pick up One Step Complete.
The Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council present the story of Cynthia and Ed.
My mother was always very active and independent, and she was familiar with her neighborhood. But one day, out of the blue, she stopped at the stop sign for much longer than usual. And she didn't know whether she should go forward or turn or just stay at the stop sign. She wasn't even really sure where she was at. She was very concerned. It was very unsettling for her.
It's important for you to talk to someone about it, to bring the family in on it. I felt so much better after my son told me, Mom, I don't want you to worry or be afraid. I'll be there for you and we'll figure it out.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-501-3689 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-501-3689 for your free author submission kit. Again, 800-501-3689.
If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes, you need a new start. Our New Start program will stop collection efforts, remove any liens the IRS has in place, and help you reduce your back taxes by as much as 80%. That's right, 80%. Call 1-800-312-9970. Let the professionals at Coast One Financial Group fight to get you the new start you deserve. If you owe at least $10,000 to the IRS and need a new start on your back taxes, call 1-800-312-9970.
All right, let's go right to the telephones. We're at 888-630-9625. Let's go to Sandy calling from Fredericksburg, Virginia. Sandy, you're on the Chris Plant Show.
Thank you very much, Chris. Whatever you do, don't give up giving us all a voice. Don't give up. My call is about trying to get a test for the virus in the state of Virginia. I am over the 65 range with a few diseases, and a primary doctor won't see you because you're sick and you have a fever. Your cardiologist won't see you because you have a fever. You start calling the state house of public health and you can't get answers. You'll run around for days. Finally, an urgent care can do a test, but the test comes back in a week. So all these people that have a lull now in this disease, I want to know if they were tested 2 weeks ago and now getting the results, or these people that are infected walking around this week won't get the results for another week. So it looks like we have a fake low, and the state of Virginia needs help.
You know, you explained yourself very well, that's a remarkable story that you've told. You're sick, and doctors won't see you because you're sick.
No, they will do a webcam, but if you're disabled, like legally blind, that don't use a webcam, there's no hope for you. And if you don't use the new smartphones with a camera, but the old flip phone that has no webcam, you're screwed there too.
Yeah.
So your only option is going to the ER, and I am a retired ER and ICU nurse, so I certainly don't want to go and get worse than I am now.
Right. Wow. So, And now, do you think that you have your career nurse? Do you think that you have the dread Wuhan Red Death virus?
Yes.
You do believe that you have it?
Yep. This temp of 102.5 for now going on 2 weeks. It just won't go down no matter what you do.
Yeah.
The headache.
Uh-huh.
Mine started with the dry cough only for a couple of days, but then it went to nausea, but no barfing, and then the other end. And then that went away, but it's the fever and the headache, and now the shortness of breath a little when you go down the hall or come up the steps.
Well, you've got pretty much all of those symptoms. There are myriad symptoms now, and you don't even have your test results back. Our numbers are fishy.
This is the Chris Plant Show.
In these uncertain times, do you need a much-needed break from cooking? If so, let Mary's Pizza Shack take care of you with their to-go delivery, curbside pickup. Mary's is offering to-go beer and wine at a special discounted rate. And as always, they have their famous pizza, pasta, soups, and salads. Open Sunday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m., and Friday and Saturday from 11 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. From Mary's family to yours, please be safe.
The Reading Civic Auditorium brings a wide variety of shows to the North State. Go to readingcivic.com and join their mailing list for free. Get early access to tickets and first dibs on the best seats in the house. Grab a drink with friends at the fully stocked bar or locally roasted coffee. Snacks and other beverages at the River Rock Cafe. Enjoy lidded beverages throughout the auditorium at every show. If you want to know about the best concerts coming to the North State, go to readingcivic.com to learn more. Orchard Nutrition Center asks, what does it mean to be local?
It's the Little League baseball team. It's a smile and a wave from a neighbor you've known for years, helping out a stranger just because it's the right thing to do.
It's a lot like Orchard Nutrition Center, caring about the people and the community that you call home.
Orchard Nutrition Center, since 1982.
We are all in it together.
With the new year, it's a great time to lose 10 pounds, paint the house, and finally clean out the garage.
Honey, why don't you start by getting a car service at Premier Oil Change? They're super fast and convenient. You get to wait in the car with free Wi-Fi and a free beverage. Plus, they have a rewards program where we can earn points that we can put towards free oil changes and services. You don't even have to make an appointment.
Wow, honey, that sounds a lot better than cleaning out the garage.
At Premier Oil Change, we strive for convenience. Our comprehensive 30-point certified service will ensure you with the peace of mind that your vehicle's in top operating condition. Add to that, free fluid top-offs. Now that is service, and we're quick. Easy in, easy out. Learn more at PremierOilChange.com. Visit us on Facebook or Instagram. Premier Oil is located in the Holiday Shopping Center in Palo Cedro or in Redding on Lake Boulevard next to Waterworks Park. Both locations, you get a free car wash. Visit us today. Home with a friendly oil change.
Premier, your friendly oil change. Premier, your friendly oil change.
Colonoscopy is the most effective method of screening for colon cancer and is the only procedure that can both detect and prevent cancer in one procedure. Take-home tests can miss up to 1 in 12 of colon cancers and most precancerous polyps. If you're 50 or older, now is the time to schedule this life-saving test. When caught early, the survival rate of colon cancer is 90%, so stop making excuses and get screened. This public service message is brought to you by Reading Endoscopy Center. Call them at 530-246-7000 or visit readingendoscopy.com.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide three delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
Discussing with Michael and Victoria in the break, Victoria and Michael, my frustration with this whole episode, this story. It's not just a story, but part of it is that it's a story, and it's an event, it's an occurrence, it's a big thing. And I'm talking to Sandy, who is describing her plight and her difficulty and trying to, and she has over 65, has the fever over 102 day after day after day, the dry cough, the headache, the symptom after symptom, and she can't get in to see anybody because she's sick, which is the opposite of making sense. She's a career nurse, ICU nurse. She knows the business, and she's diagnosing herself, and I believe her, and I trust her. Sounds like a perfectly reasonable, rational person. And then got to urgent care, and which is, and of course, you don't want to go into the emergency room. The emergency room being told is a hotbed of the virus, and you don't want to overload over already overloaded healthcare system. And so you're being told to do it virtually. And if you're older, you're not sitting home doing Zoom and FaceTime all day. So it presents hurdles, obstacles, difficulties. Oh, sure, just learn a whole new set of technologies, and then we'll start paying attention to your health care because there's a national health care crisis. We can't see you. Now, that makes a lot of sense, right? And then they go to get the test, and they say, well, we'll get your results back in a week. Now, that suggests a whole lot of things. It raises a lot of questions, and it speaks to one of my frustrations on this because, as I was saying to Michael and Victoria just a couple of minutes ago, I'm kind of a... when it comes to stories like this, I'm a numeric guy. I'm a numbers guy. I crunch the numbers. I gobble up the numbers. I consume them. I digest them. I remember them. I synthesize them. I can take a set of numbers from over here and apply them over there. But this story has thwarted any effort, frustrated any effort to stay on top of the numbers because the numbers are a constantly moving target. It's describing them as mercury on a plate yesterday or day before yesterday. And you just can't put your finger on it. You can't put your thumb on this because it squirts out from under you. And part of the problem is what Sandy was describing. The tests, the not getting tests, the people being told to stay home if they have symptoms. We don't actually know how many people have the virus. We don't know what percentage of the population has the virus. Therefore, we don't know what the mortality rate is because we don't know how many people have it. And you frustrate, when you don't have the numbers, you frustrate every effort to get a handle on, to get your hands around this story and get your hands around the numbers and the epidemiology of it. Which I'm, perfectly happy to do if the numbers are there. But since the numbers change twice a day, it's like there's a dirty trick being played on you, and it's very, very frustrating. You can learn all the numbers this morning, and then this afternoon it's a totally new set of numbers. Fox News this morning was putting out numbers. I recognize them all to be wrong. It was in the Fox and Friends show. When I first heard them, I started looking them up, and sure enough, they're all wrong. Just every number they were giving out in a screed, every number was wrong. And I'm frustrated, but what do you do? And they think that the numbers they're giving are right, but they're demonstrably false. In New York, you have, it's an all-time low, but that depends on how you score. Are you talking about hospitalizations? You talk about people going on ventilators? You're talking about deaths? All those numbers are looking good, but they're talking about a second peak coming because blah, 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 blah. So just trying to stay on top of the numbers is a very frustrating effort. And here's the one thing that I'm certain of because I've dug deeply enough into this, that nobody really knows what's going on with the numbers. That's Fauci doesn't know, Birx doesn't know, President Trump doesn't know, the NIH doesn't know, CDC doesn't know. They've got better numbers now out of New York and California and Oklahoma and other in Florida and other places where the apocalyptic view is not materializing. It's just not materializing, and I hope that it won't. But what do you say when all this is over and it doesn't? The apocalypse that they were warning us of simply doesn't materialize, not even close. What do you say then? What do you say then with all the economic damage that's been done? And I've got a lot to say about it, a number of articles I want to get to. And these crazy lefties, they're just insane. But right now, let's get back to the phones. And normal people, not media people, but normal people. Let's go to Jennifer calling from Martinsburg, West Virginia. Jennifer, you're on the Chris Plant Show.
Good morning. I actually have two things. I work on the backside of a healthcare system, the coding part. Uh-huh. That, no patient care. But one part with the numbers that you'd probably find very interesting is, as of April 1st, there is a specific code for this now that we are to use for confirmed. However, if any patient comes in with an exposure to, that now has to be the first listed code. So there's where all your SKU numbers are. So they're taking those numbers for all their statistics, where not necessarily positive, but now they're going with those. And that's been mandated as of April 1st. All coders are to use it that way.
But explain what that means. So somebody comes into an emergency room, somebody's staying at the hospital, they test them for the coronavirus, they have the coronavirus, then
not
what does
even
that mean?
Tested. Not even tested. Just if you're, there's like a 7 questionnaire every patient has to have if you have face-to-face contact, or if you need to go to a respiratory care clinic to get actually tested. So just an exposure to, now the CDC is taking those numbers as, oh, you know, it's possible positive, therefore positive. So you could have been exposed to somebody, even just gone out of state, and that will test positive, therefore we have to assign that to your chart now, and therefore they have another number for positive.
Well, you said it will test positive. You don't mean that they actually take a test. They're saying, oh, you're out of state, so they check that as a...
It's a questionnaire.
And if you're out of the country, so there's no actual test for the coronavirus. That's just a questionnaire. You said 7 questions?
7 questions. And, you know, some of them do go on to get tested, and it could be positive. But that's where all the numbers are skewed, because now we have to assign this code. That doesn't actually mean that they have it.
Well, you do coding in the healthcare industry. So what does this mean to us, to the numbers that we're hearing every day?
They are not believable. I mean, there is going to be some positive, but they're making it worse than what it is, because just because you have an exposure does not mean that you'll ever have it. But, you know, they have to make their numbers fit whatever, you know, thing that they're trying to force down American people's throat. And I think this was the easiest way for them to do that is by mandating it, because I've been in coding for many years, and there's never been a time with any illness that has to be the first listed, unless, you know, it's normally. Like, an exposure to is never first listed to, unless you're getting a test for, like, malaria or, you know, something. This is the first time in healthcare.
First time in healthcare that you've seen it operate like this.
Yes, where it has to be first because the numbers have to match, you know, what they're showing.
And then we have, I don't know if you saw this yesterday, there is a state senator in the state of Minnesota who's also a medical doctor, Scott Jensen is his name. He said that he received a 7-page document from the Minnesota Health Department, asked him to fill out death certificates with a diagnosis of COVID-19, whether the person actually died from COVID-19 or not. This is a doctor who's a state senator who's raising this question. So all over the country, the different countries, we know this now, right, Jennifer, that Italy keeps the numbers differently than we keep them. Italy keeps the numbers differently from France, differently than Germany. And we keep them differently as well. So when we're comparing ourselves to Italy, it's not an apples-to-apples comparison when it comes to the epidemiology and to the numbers, right?
Right.
And when we're comparing,
if you came in with a car accident and, you know, unfortunately you died, it's anywhere in your note, you might have had exposure. That exposure code is going to be first listed. Therefore, they will attribute that death to COVID-19.
So what does that mean about this? I mean, you're in the healthcare industry. You're a smart person. You work in this in coding. And what does this mean to us? How am I supposed to respond when I hear this information?
I don't really know if there is a clear cut way, because depending on who you're talking to is, you know, how they want you to digest this information. Mm-hmm. I digest it as in the American people need to know how many people are tested positive, not tested because they have a positive exposure. There is a difference, and they're putting the two together. And that would ultimately come from the CDC as to, you know, differentiate those two codes. And they're just not doing it. They refuse to.
Wow. Well, all right, it's your business. You're in this business, and you don't believe the numbers. You don't trust the numbers. And does that mean the numbers are better or worse, or we just don't know?
I think we don't know. I think there's probably a lot of people have had it that just, you know, I believe it already came through, you know, this country once. And if they had the genetic testing done in January right there, already shows you. It's already been here. It's already done a couple rounds. And the more we actually need exposure to get, you know, the health benefits from it. You don't build up an immunity without ever having it.
Right.
But they just have everybody so scared that you know, absolute power corrupts absolutely, and the government wants to be the absolute power over everybody.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, this is not, I hear more and more people, even people that aren't inclined toward conspiracy things, I hear more and more people just not buying what we're getting from the government. And I had President Trump, I think, has a task in front of him right now with taking this thing and shaking it out a little bit. And I know that he's on the brink of doing that with trying to get the economy back up and running and people back to work. And he was pushing for Easter Sunday. You know, the peak, they keep telling us the peak is going to be Tuesday. It was supposed to be last Tuesday. Then it's Friday. And now it's Easter Sunday. And everything, once again, it's another moving target. And then there may be more than one peak, and you really can't take anything to the bank in this, and you haven't been able to take anything to the bank from the very beginning, and you try to put your faith and confidence in people, and people will let you down. And the media is really, once again, at the epicenter of the problem here, because they're not getting to the truth. They're not, their goal is not the truth. Their goal is to win the election for the Democrats, and it really is an election year virus, and the news media is more concerned, as usual, about get Trump and the anti-Republican politics of it all than they are about human life, which is not at all surprising, but absolutely extraordinary stuff. Jennifer, thank you.
Thank you
very much. Yeah, you bet. You know, that, look, this is, and we're all making our way through this thing. And it doesn't matter how much news you consume. You can consume news on this all day long and be no more well-informed than you were when you went to bed last night. Because the more information you take in doesn't actually mean that you're going to be more well-informed. You're going to have more data points. You can watch CNN all day long and just be wrong about everything. Watch MSNBC. Collect all the information they have, and you can regurgitate the information that you've gleaned from NBC and CNN. And sound like you've learned a lot of things, but most of it is going to be wrong, and key elements of it are going to be wrong, and it's just like nothing I've ever seen before. It's extraordinary. Now, I mentioned earlier that there was, and because, you know, New York was going to be overwhelmed, and then they weren't, and President Trump said he didn't think they're going to need 30,000 respirators, and the media attacked them like a gang of jihadis. And for saying such an outrageous thing. And now New York apparently now passed their peak, needed about 5,000 ventilators, not 30,000, not 40,000, as the desk-pounding baby doc Cuomo up there was saying. But it looks like President Trump was a lot closer to right. In the meantime, we brought in the hospital ship, the USNS Comfort, to New York Harbor and the Mercy on the West Coast, 1,000-bed hospital ships. We had private groups and the Army Corps of Engineers going around building like Army field hospitals, like MASH units. And they were going to build another one at the Cathedral St. John the Divine in New York in Manhattan. And here's the headline, St. John the Divine no longer opening field hospital in New York City. Well, I guess the crisis has passed then. Is that what I should conclude? And this is WCBS in New York. St. John the Divine will no longer be opening its field hospital in New York City, according to CBS, WCBS's Mac Rosenberg. The Morningside Heights Church wanted to offer 9 tents for at least 200 patients, but Mount Sinai canceled the plans, the hospital Mount Sinai. You see, the plans were allegedly shot down when it was revealed the Christian humanitarian group, Samaritan's Purse, was involved in the church's setup. ABC News reports that there were concerns among the church's leadership about past anti-Muslim and anti-LGBT comments made by Samaritan's Purse leader, the Reverend Franklin Graham. Now, this is the son of Billy Graham. We got to take a break here, but the son of Billy Graham, Franklin Graham, is involved with the organization. They were offering to set up a free hospital, but leftists found out or decided that Franklin Graham at some point had said something that was deemed by the left to be anti-LGBT. So let him die. So die in the grass, die in the bushes, die on the sidewalk. And anti-Muslim comments, I'm guessing, might have had something to do with the jihad and terrorism. You know, the mass murder of innocents in the name of political Islam. I'm thinking that maybe something like that. But lefties are, once again, less concerned about saving human life, about providing comfort to people, about human beings living, than they are about their insane left-wing, politically correct code of conduct. And they've undoubtedly misrepresented him in order to accomplish this as well, because that's who they are and that's what they do. Be right back.
You're listening to The Chris Plant Show.
Please listen. This is important. Anyone can be affected by the prescription opioid crisis. If you think you've been hurt by Purdue or its prescription opioids like OxyContin, you may be entitled to compensation as part of Purdue's bankruptcy, but you have to file a claim. Claims may include overdose, death, substance use disorder, lost wages, and neonatal abstinence syndrome. A confidential claim can be filed by individuals, a legal guardian, by survivors or relatives of people who have died or are disabled. The deadline to file a claim is June 30th, 2020, or you will lose your right to file a claim. For more information, visit PurduePharmaClaims.com, or you can call toll-free 1-844-217-0912. That's 1-844-217-0912. Paid for by Prime Clerk, LLC.
She used to play hide-and-seek in your backyard. Now, she's getting married in it. So when you see a bare spot, you need something that patches it fast. Pennington One Step Complete has a revolutionary formula that repairs bare spots in only 2 weeks or less. Pennington has been trusted since 1945, and now it works even faster. One Step Complete from Pennington. Honest green. Get your lawn ready for any occasion. Head to your local retailer to pick up One Step Complete.
Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans and Rocket Mortgage. During these challenging times, our commitment to providing you with the best mortgage experience remains. We understand that hardships may arise, and we're prepared to help. Mortgage rates remain near historic lows. If you think that now is the right time to refinance your mortgage, our home loan experts are available to help 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. At rocketmortgage.com.
Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org. Number 3033.
I was in the hospital with my son for 18 months.
When he got injured, I wasn't prepared, but I knew I had to be strong.
When I was told about John's injury, I was in complete shock. I just remember rushing into his room and giving him a big hug and letting him know I was there.
These veterans and families are just a few of the heroes we serve at Homes for Our Troops. For thousands of severely injured veterans, everyday life is filled with barriers.
It was really the little things throughout the house. Counters that you can't roll up to.
I had to drag my wheelchair down steps.
I want to help, but he is so determined.
At Homes for Our Troops, we build specially adapted custom homes with features like wheelchair access, roll-in showers, and automatic door openers that allow them to function independently and focus on their recovery and family.
This house is freedom.
It's hope. It's a new beginning.
This house has given me my family back.
To learn more, visit hfotusa.org.
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-501-3689 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-501-3689 for your free author submission kit. Again, 800-501-3689.
If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes, you need a new start. Our New Start program will stop collection efforts, remove any liens the IRS has in place, and help you reduce your back taxes by as much as 80%. That's right, 80%. Call 1-800-312-9970. Let the professionals at Coast One Financial Group fight to get you the new start you deserve. If you owe at least $10,000 to the IRS and need a new start on your back taxes, call 1-800-312-9970.
Message and data rates may apply.
Earning your degree from one of the top business schools in the country might sound impossible to fit into your workload. But what if there were a business degree that advanced your career skills and gave you access to world-renowned faculty, leaders, and mentors all on your schedule? One that opened doors to some of the most influential CEOs, tech companies, law firms, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders. And what if you could earn that degree in as little as 16 months, 100% online? Find out more. Text NET to 79645. Start on the path to earning your MBA or Business Analytics Master's degree online from the W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University today. Learn more about the graduate programs from the top-ranked W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University offered 100% online. Text NET to 79645. That's N-E-T to 79645.
All right. Yes, this Minnesota doctor slash state senator says that the CDC guidelines for doctors, which are used to certify whether a person died from the coronavirus, are ridiculous. He said they're ridiculous and could mislead the public. With that, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Stacy calling from New Jersey. Stacy, you're on the Chris Plant Show.
Hi, Chris. I love you. Even in the worst day, you just crack me up.
Well, thank you. What's not funny about all this, huh?
You crack me up.
Well, that's nice to hear.
I work in a medical. You're welcome. I work in a medical office. I do the billing. And your last caller was talking about the coding is 100% right. You know, this is very inflated. It's not that it's not serious. Mm-hmm. And the reason doctors don't want sick patients coming in is because they don't want their elderly well patients to get sick. Mm-hmm. It's so contagious.
Yeah.
That said, they're still inflating the numbers.
Well, and you've said
you
several
know what?
Things
this
here.
It's all about justifying. I'm going to tell you. This is all about justifying the administrative state.
Well,
think
that's
about that.
Where a lot of people are going on this, I've got to say. It really is. And the left, from the very beginning, has seen this as an opportunity, and nothing but an opportunity. Total disregard for human life in the United States. Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and the rest is just Christmas for them. It's a grab bag for them. But you did say it's serious. It's very contagious. But the numbers are inflated, right?
Yes.
And
yes.
And you see a growth in the administrative state occurring under cover of the virus.
Yes, absolutely.
And
you're tickets for a woman that we don't know that she why she died. She's an elderly woman. She was I don't know if she was tested positive, but they assumed that she was COVID, and that's what they put.
Yeah, they assumed. Yeah, very odd. And in mortuaries, the way that they are judging this, too, as though they should be judging, is also peculiar.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.